my best friend.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
For my friends.
77 WABC.
Jury selection begins for Donald Trump's hush money trial in New York City. It is the first criminal trial of any president in American history. CBS's Chanel Call is outside the courthouse where it is all going to unfold. Chanel.
Trump is required by law to show up at this Manhattan courthouse in what's being called the trial of the century.
Speaking at a campaign event in Pennsylvania Saturday, former President Donald Trump teased his upcoming criminal trial.
I will be forced to sit fully gagged. I'm not allowed to talk.
Trump faces 34 felony counts of falsifying business records, accused of covering up a $130,000 hush money payment to porn star Stormy Daniels in the run-up to the 2016 presidential election. Prosecutors and Trump's defense team will begin questioning more than 500 potential Manhattan jurors. They'll need to agree on 12 plus alternates. Judge Juan Merchan is overseeing what's expected to be a 6 to 8 week trial. Last month, he issued a gag order. Twice last week, Trump disparaged his former fixer, Michael Cohen, who already pleaded guilty for campaign finance violations.
And some legal experts say prosecutors and Trump's defense team will be closely looking for stealth jurors, people who lie to get on the jury. Jury selection is expected to take weeks.
I'm going to ask Joseph Tacopina. And if Joseph Tacopina thinks this is about me, then we'll leave it right there. Joseph Tacopina, good morning, buddy. How are you?
It's about you. They're not really talking about this trial on WFAN. I mean, I don't even think they know there is a trial on WFAN. So what morning show? I mean, you know, what is it, 10:10? They do the helicopter and traffic and weather, right? So what other morning talk show in New York City would they be talking about on the radio? So basically, congratulations. You made it into the most historical trial in the United States history. Trial, the first criminal trial of a former president of the United States, and you are prominently featured as someone who the prosecutors want to avoid listenership at all costs.
Turning our attention to local news, a young girl punched in the face at Grand Central Terminal, and the MTA police are asking for your help in finding the suspect. The 9-year-old was standing near her mother in the dining concourse when the suspect approached and punched her. They are looking nearby for him. Officers who happened to be near where this girl was punched was able to render the young girl aid. She was taken to the hospital for treatment, but the suspect, who MTA police say is known to them, got away. If you have any information on his whereabouts, you are asked to contact MTA police.
Here back at home, the Biden administration said their support for Israel's security is ironclad. But behind the scenes, the president clearly working to avoid a full-scale war in the Middle East. CBS's Skylar Henry is at the White House with more on that. Skylar.
Hey, Jerika, good evening to you. Well, President Biden spent Sunday making calls to both foreign leaders and members of Congress, stressing continued support for Israel.
A U.S. official with direct knowledge of the conflict in Israel tells CBS News President Biden told Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu America will not participate in a retaliatory strike on Iran following Saturday's drone and missile attack, though the administration says it will protect U.S. forces and troops in the region if they're threatened.
They wanted to cause damage, no question about that. But they were utterly unsuccessful in doing so.
Senior administration officials called Israel's defense, quote, spectacular, touting the extraordinary level of coordination from allies to help. But the challenges still remain in the region and with public perception. A new CBS News poll released Sunday, gathered before Iran's attack, shows nearly 40% of Americans want President Biden to encourage Israel to stop military actions in Gaza. 63% of Americans say that more humanitarian aid should be sent to Palestinians, but most Republicans polled still oppose that. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill agree Israel needs support, but what that measure looks like is still in question.
God bless the people of Israel. They're under attack right now. That's because we show great weakness. This would not happen. The weakness that we've shown is unbelievable, and it would not have happened if we were in office.
How does this change your plans this week in terms of voting on an aid package for Israel?
Well, we've understood the urgency of this from the very beginning. I mean, a few days after I became speaker, way back in October, we passed our Israel support package. It's been sitting on Chuck Schumer's desk ever since because we included a pay for, as you remember. What a concept. We took from the IRS expansion slush fund to pay for the Israel priority. We tried it again just about a month and a half ago, a clean Israel that many Democrats, 166, as I remember, in the House voted against. Why? Because President Joe Biden said that he would veto that. So the House Republicans and the Republican Party understand the necessity of standing with Israel. We are going to try again this week, and the details of that package are being put together right now. We're looking at the options and all these supplemental issues.
One of you guys said, no one said anything about Israel. I said, great. I don't have the money, the wherewithal, the logistics to make it happen, but sounds like a great idea. Let's do it. Long story short, I've got a buddy in Israel. His name is Judah Honigman. You may know his dad, Stewie Honigman. And he lives there. And he got in touch with a guy named Scott, who works with One Israel Fund. And with the help of One Israel Fund, Rabbi Blumstein and Dov Heiken, sure enough, that dream became a reality the end of January. And for one full week, we did my show, number one in New York and across the country, live from Jerusalem.
Save a Prayer, 6:11 on your Monday morning, brand new week on your favorite talk show in New York City, the self-proclaimed best talk show anywhere in the country. That's us, all of us, Lou Ruffino, Justin Ellick, Noam Layden, Joe Nolan, Curtis Sliwa, and of course me, Sid Rosenberg. This is Sid and Friends in the Morning, and man, is this a busy day and a busy week. Of course, we know my friend President Trump is in New York. This ridiculous trial, which he's probably going to lose, which is really hard to believe based on the evidence, that starts today and may last upwards of 6 to 8 weeks. And as you heard Jason Miller, who works very closely with Donald Trump, tell me on this program a week ago today, the president must be in court Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Wednesday, an off day. I don't think the weather is going to be as nice Wednesday as it's going to be today and tomorrow. It may hit close to 80 degrees and sunny today, a great golf day for Trump. So hopefully the president finds a way to get some golf in on Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And when he has to make campaign visits, he can do that on Wednesdays, Saturday, and Sundays. Wednesday right now, 61 and maybe some rain. 78 today, 72 tomorrow. So the two nicest days of the week are the next 2 days. So you got Trump here. That's obviously big. You got the Israel stuff, which I'll get to momentarily. Friday is my birthday. And if it's my birthday, it's also Naomi's birthday, my mother. Of course, I was born on my mother's 32nd birthday. So coming up this Friday, I'll be 57. And my mom, who you folks love, she's a cult hero, she'll be 89. And then a week from today is the first day of Pesach, Passover. So a lot going on, Noam Layden, a lot going on.
That is a lot, yeah.
Then you got the Knickerbockers. They start the playoffs on Saturday. Congratulations to the New York Knicks. All those injuries, all those questions, and the Knicks end up being the 2 seed. Only the Boston Celtics had a better record than the Knicks inside the Eastern Conference this year. So now the Knicks await the winner of the play-in game Wednesday night between the 76ers and the Heat. And that'll be the Knicks' first round matchup starting on Saturday. And the Rangers, nice comeback victory Saturday, beat the Islanders in overtime 3-2, holding on to that top spot now with 112 points, just 1 point ahead of Carolina, and just 3 points ahead of Boston. Any one of those three teams can still win the President's Cup. Rangers, very simple. They beat Ottawa tonight, they win the President's Cup. But if the Rangers lose tonight, then Carolina has a chance to win the Cup with a victory Tuesday in Columbus. And if the Rangers lose tonight and Carolina loses tomorrow, the Bruins can still win it with a home game, an away game in Washington tonight and hosting Ottawa tomorrow. So the Rangers in the driver's seat, Carolina right behind them, Boston an outside chance, and the Islanders, looks like they're going to make the playoffs. Isles are in New Jersey tonight. They'll host Pittsburgh on Wednesday, and right now enjoying a 3-point lead over both Washington and Detroit for that wild card spot. So a lot going on with the NBA, the NHL, the Mets and Yanks. But I got to get to the Israel story right off the bat. So if you guys follow me on social media, especially on Instagram, at Rosenberg.Sydney, at Rosenberg.Sydney, and again, it is private now, coming back from Israel, dealing with all these death threats, I am no longer public. I have to accept you on my page. But if you go to at Rosenberg.Sydney, odds are you got a good chance of getting in. Facebook, very simple, Sid Rosenberg. Today, I'm proudly wearing the shirt that Harry and Pat made for me. New York stands with Israel, with half the American flag and half the Israeli flag. And you heard at the very end of today's open, put together by Justin Ellick, my little speech I made last night. I was at a really nice event last night. And it was Inwood, New York. You know that place, Lewis? Inwood, New York?
Yep, I do. Well, five towns.
Yeah, it's right? The five towns. Exactly right. And my friend Rabbi Bloomstein invited me to show up at this this event to thank Hashem. Of course, that's God. Thanking Hashem for 3 incredible years of growing closer to Hashem and each other. This is about the shul that Rabbi Bloomstein is the rabbi at in Woodmere, and they honored a bunch of great people, Akiva and Sarah Portes, Shalom Jacobs, and my dear friends, Dov and Shani Hykind. And I gave Dov and Shani Hykind an award last night. It was a great event. My buddy Gene Stevens was there. My friend David Oppen showed up. We'll have more on this later. Dov is going to join me live this morning at 9:15, but that's how I spent my night last night. The Jew came at me again big this weekend after what happened on Saturday. But let me tell you what happened Saturday. And this was met with a lot of criticism yesterday. But this is how I feel. There is no question this quote-unquote attack from Iran was anything but. I mean, yes, could one of those missiles have fallen and killed somebody? Sure. You just don't know. They're sending over weaponry. Anything can happen. But I am 1,000% sure that Joe Biden helped orchestrate this whole attack. What do I mean by that? Well, I had heard from Alex Trayman on Friday on this show, and Trayman will join me coming up in about 20 minutes that Joe Biden was on the phone with Iran Thursday and Friday. So here's how it went, okay, guys? Here's how it goes. Listen, I know you guys are pissed off. The Israelis killed your guy in Syria. I know you got to show some, save some face. You got to do something for your country. I get all that. Here's what we're going to do, okay? You're going to let us know well before these drones are on the way so that we're in position to shoot these things out of the sky. You're not going to send your most powerful missiles, not the ones that get to Tel Aviv in 12 minutes. You're going to send drones and some missiles, and between us and Saudi Arabia and Jordan, which, by the way, that all goes back to Trump's Abraham Accords, and the United Kingdom, we're going to shoot these down. You're not going to kill anybody. No one's going to be mad. And then the pressure will be on Israel not to do anything in return. That's how it's going to go. And I'm going to make sure that the war in the Middle East doesn't really explode with your attack coming up on Saturday. All right. Sounds good, Joe. You got it. Between Turkey and the United States, you'll know before. And this way, as these drones get set to attack Israel, you'll blast them out of the sky and look like a million bucks. Now, the unfortunate part is, for my friend Judah Honickman, who lives in Jerusalem, for my friend Alex Trayman, who lives in Jerusalem, for Mark Levin, the great Mark Levin, who was there for Ron Dermer's son's bar mitzvah on Saturday night, they didn't know that. And these poor Israeli people were running in and out of bomb shelters. They were scared to death. But if you don't think that Joe Biden and the Americans and the United States knew everything beforehand, you're an idiot. This was not a major attack. This was not Iran paying Israel back. This was, to be honest, lame. I know hundreds of drones and hundreds of missiles. People could have been killed. Nobody died. Was it all Hashem? I'd like to think so. I know not. It was not all Hashem. It was a coordinated effort by our crooked president and this garbage administration, which doesn't care about Israel even a little, to make sure that Iran doesn't blow Israel off the map, basically, and now the United States has to deal with that. Remember, folks, remember this. Back in November, right, the war started October 7th. Back in November, Joe Biden, once again, actually allowed Iran to collect another $10 billion. Did you know that, Noam Layden?
I did.
So how does Hamas do what they do October the 7th and November the 15th, the president of the United States allows them, and he was warned. He was warned by somebody in Iran that this money does not go to humanitarian needs, that it goes right to the terrorists, and he still made it possible for the Iranians to collect $10 billion of that frozen fund. How could he possibly be pro-Israel and allow, literally 6 weeks after an attack that was funded by that country to come up with another $10 billion? So when I tell you that he is in bed with Iran and he was a part of this brutal attack, which it wasn't, on Saturday night, don't tell me, hey, Sid, now you've gone too far. Now you're telling me the United States is complicit. You bet your ass I am. I'm telling you 1,000% they knew about this, Biden. Other countries knew about it. And we were going to make sure we look like a million bucks and make sure that Israel was not going to fire back. How do I know that? It took Biden 5 minutes. This is really where you know I'm not lying here. It took Biden 5 minutes to say afterwards, we will not help Israel if, in fact, they want to counterattack Iran. But why not? Why not? They sent hundreds and hundreds of missiles. They could have killed thousands of people. And the president takes 5 minutes to say, hey, Israel, you got the win. What do you mean you got the win? What, because nobody died? What about all the people that were scared to death on Saturday night? What about all the work and sweat and fear and all that on Saturday from people who didn't know better like I do? What about all that? You got the win? That was Biden's remark. You got the win. Don't do anything now. Everything I'm telling you makes sense. Everything. You know what doesn't make sense? Is Iran wanted to wipe out Israel, told everybody about it, and nobody died. That makes no sense. Am I making sense here, Lou?
I'm following you, yeah. I was wondering, did you have other information? Did you?
Doesn't matter. Maybe I did. Maybe I do. I can't share that.
I'm just curious. That's all.
But you don't even need other information. You've got to be somewhere between naive and stupid and closer to the latter to not know that this was an absolute coordination and the United States was involved. I mean, you got to be a moron.
It's sad. Nope. Sad. You do. Yes, of course. Of course they're involved. Yes, I believe you. I agree. It's too coordinated and too.
Right. Hundreds and hundreds of missiles, and Hashem made sure nobody died. I mean, come on. I mean, Noam, what are your thoughts?
I believe in Hashem.
So do I.
It is amazing. You know, I sat here on Saturday night. We did coverage of the event, and I thought, geez, this is going to be a lot of people killed because they said 200 killer drones were going in Israel's
killer
direction.
Killer drones, right.
And then, you know, they're suicide drones, right? They're meant to cause harm. And then you have all these missiles, and the Iron Dome can't stop the drones. They only stop the low-range missiles. So they had to be shot out of the sky. So I thought, geez, how's this going to end? And then when you ended and only one, a kid was hit by shrapnel,
right.
A Bedouin kid, that was the only thing that happened, and maybe a little bit of damage on the ground, but not even. You're like, what is going on here?
I told you. Well, I just told you. So. And we look like a million bucks. Biden's a hero. The United States helped save the day. You know what actually did help save the day?
Who's that?
Jordan and Saudi Arabia. And you know why, folks? Because of Trump. Yes. Do you know why Jordan and Saudi Arabia helped shoot down those drones? Not because they love the Jews. They don't. They hate us like everybody else. But you may remember when Trump was president, he put together something called the Abraham Accords. Oh, yeah. And because of the Abraham Accords, countries like Jordan and Saudi Arabia, who would love it if Israel was eliminated today, now they're on our side. Not a lot of talk about that, right? I mean, Biden was standing there taking all the credit and thank you to our friends in Jordan and Saudi Arabia and United Kingdom. Nonsense. Those countries specifically helped with this effort on Saturday because of one man and one man only, Donald Trump. You know that, Noam.
We've never seen cooperation like that before. I mean, the fact that, can you get your mind around the fact that like a decade ago, these militaries never would have helped Israel out. And here they were taking down these drones.
Yeah, but why?
Sort of unbelievable.
Because of the Abraham Accords. Because of Donald Trump. Not because of Joe Biden. Not because they love Israel. You know, the people in Jordan hate Israel. Abraham Accords. Donald Trump. Did you give Donald Trump credit the last 2 days?
I don't remember doing so.
No, of course not. I'm not knocking you. I'm just telling you that's how the media works. So if you're amazed by the support from Jordan and Saudi Arabia, you can thank our friend who's sitting in a courtroom in New York City this morning because of some racist, douchebag, fat, jerk-off district attorney. His name is Alvin Bragg, who was actually celebrating yesterday, touting how violent crimes are down in New York City, moments after we saw the story about the same guy they arrested not that long ago punching a 9-year-old girl across the face. It is unbelievable. Eric Adams, Alvin Bragg, all these people that go on and on about how great things are. Things are improving. And every day there's a horrendous story. Every day you do the news, Noam. Are you ever, ever, ever in a situation where you don't have a violent or nasty story in New York City? Ever?
I could spend my entire 5 o'clock hour. I mean, nobody wants to hear it, but I could spend the entire 5 o'clock hour doing the crime blotter.
Yeah, it's unreal. So, folks, that's what I put on Instagram yesterday. Some folks were very upset with me, even some folks at this affair I was at last night. You know, somebody said to me, I can't tell you the person's name, but they're a liberal. They're a liberal. And I sent them my video from yesterday. And I said, the United States knew all about this and helped make sure that Israelis didn't die. And they want to take credit today for being this savior, which is nonsense. And this liberal said to me, you know what, Sid? I agree with you. He said, in fact, this is more like a movie than it is a war. And again, for the poor people in Israel, for the Judah Honigmans and Alex Tremans, it was not a movie. They were in bomb shelters all night. They were scared to death. But when you're on the outside looking in at all that happened, this liberal who I spoke to yesterday said more of a movie than a war is exactly right. That's how pathetic things have become. And that's why Bibi Netanyahu, at a crossroads, I get it, because the United States said, we're not going to help you in a counterattack. That's why Bibi right now has to say, F you. F you, we're going into Rafah, and Tehran, they're going to pay a price.
And it's not a movie for the hostages, that's for sure.
Oh, no, but that doesn't do it Saturday. I mean, he's talking about specifically Saturday night. I mean, obviously, the whole thing, right.
Of course.
But Saturday night was a movie. It was a choreographed movie. Actually, Ralph Napolitano just said, you're right again, Sid, a WWE script. That's all it was. And I knew it right away. And I said it, and I said it first, early yesterday morning. And I guarantee you, you'll see reports. We saw last night already, number two in Iran. Yes, the U.S. knew. Helped the whole thing. U.S. and Turkey. You're going to find out more today that was the case. We weren't saviors, not by any stretch. We actually helped make this whole thing happen in an effort to get closer to peace. Right? Because we want the Iranians to be happy. Now they've got a chance to strike back. They look good with their people, even though it was a pathetic effort. Pathetic. And the Israelis, hey, you won. And Biden thinks that's it. Now the question is, does Bibi think that's it? We'll find out. Big, 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 big guest list coming up today. I mean, a big show. 6:45 live to Jerusalem. Alex Trayman, who intimated all of this early on Friday morning. Forget about me being right. It looks like Alex Trayman was right. He'll join us live from Jerusalem at 6:45. Curtis Sliwa coming up at 7:15. He's always great. He had a busy day yesterday out there at Kings Plaza in Brooklyn. We'll talk to Curtis coming up at 7:15. The great attorney, Alan Dershowitz, he'll be here at 7:45. Former Trump ambassador to Israel, one of my favorite people, David Friedman. He'll be here at 8:15. Mr. War Room, the great Steve Bannon. He'll be here at 8:45. Dove Hyken, who last night I gave a beautiful award to him and his wife, Shani. He'll be here at 9:15. And we'll close it out with House Republican Mike Lawler coming up at 9:35. The number is always 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. It's a Monday morning. With this kick-ass Jew, Sid Rosenberg, get ready, folks. Put that seatbelt on.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Entertaining and informative.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
One morning, I'm
phone blowing up already early this morning with people that are agreeing with me. Sid, you're 100% right. There's no question this was a coordinated effort in the United States. Was involved. We're no heroes, not even close. Joe Biden is no hero today. Joe Biden was part of the, I guess he was a director or a producer in this, what turned out to be movie. I know there was a 10-year-old girl, Bedouin girl, that was injured. And again, you really can't account for the fear that the poor Israeli people, the civilians, were going through. But, I'm sorry, man. There was nothing authentic about this attack. Nothing. Nothing. We knew. Everybody else knew. We were in position to shoot everything down. Why? Because our intelligence is so good. You think I'm an asshole? Come on. Come on. I was born at night, not last night. So now all these, according to Yehuda Honigman, all these people in Israel, I guess, want to talk to me, one of them being Yoni Kempinski from Israel National News, Arutz Sheva, they want my take, and all they had to do is go back to my Instagram page yesterday. I didn't come up with this, concoct this yesterday afternoon or yesterday evening. I right away, Sunday morning, I'm like, this is clearly what happened. Joe Biden's taking a victory lap. Israel, you got the win. It was embarrassing for Iran, I'll tell you that. Now, look, they can still save face and say, well, we did what we had to do, but it was embarrassing. You can't be tough and talk tough and for weeks. We're going to come back and Israel's going to feel the pain and put together this lame attack. Yes, it was a lot of drones and a lot of missiles, but they didn't use the good stuff. And again, they gave everybody ample time, all of us, to make sure it didn't happen. So we're going to talk all day about this. I've got Alex Trayman coming on. Curtis, I'm sure we'll talk about it. David Friedman, Alan Dershowitz, Dov Hykind. I mean, we got more Jews on this show today than live in Borough Park. This has become Jew Central, and I have zero remorse. The folks who go, all Sid talks about is the Jews. Well, that's stupid. Of course, that's not true. Donald Trump isn't Jewish. And by the way, my ratings have been so good, that clearly Christians care too. I have so many conversations with Christians, Gaim, who are with Israel 100% with me, and they can't get enough of this conversation. So I know right off the bat when somebody complains about the quote-unquote Jew talk, that they're probably an anti-Semite, and Jews complain. But we've been over this, right, haven't we? Chuck Schumer, Bernie Sanders, Ron Kuby. Jews are their own worst enemies. What's going on locally, Noam, that I should know about this morning?
Well, the Trump trial being the biggest event, security is going to be really tight. Lower Manhattan around 100 Center Street, where that trial gets underway today. That's far and away the biggest story of the day. And then it's tax day, if that's a big deal. If you haven't paid your taxes, you got to pay them today.
Those are and what about the 9-year-old girl, you know, this scumbag?
Yeah.
Who wasn't white, he wasn't Jewish, he was a black guy again, you know.
I
hate to point that out, but he was a black guy again. He had done this before, not that long ago.
Yeah, this is another one of these incredible stories. This guy should have never been on the streets. His name is Gene Carlos Zarzullo. So it was about a week ago that he punched a commuter inside Grand Central Station. A grown woman broke her nose.
Yeah, broke her nose. Yeah.
Right, so then he's let out, no bail.
Who's the judge? I know that they put the judge's name. And I got to name and shame these people. If I don't do that, I'm not doing my job. So we know who the scumbag perp is, but who are the judges? I've been saying this for weeks, right? We blame everybody except for the judges.
Well, I can tell you the judge in this case. It's Manhattan Judge Lori Peterson.
Now, Lori Peterson was the one who did what? There were two judges involved in this. What did Lori Peterson do exactly? Did she let this guy out?
So he's arraigned. I'm just reading this because he was arraigned on assault, reckless endangerment, and harassment charges in the case, but was released without bail by Judge Lori Peterson.
Lori Peterson,
yeah.
You feel good about that today? Hey, Lori Peterson, you got a little girl, little daughter? You know, I hate to say this. I really hate to say it, but maybe it should have been your daughter who was punched across the face. Because maybe then you realize that putting bad people on the streets that do bad things to good people, that shouldn't be the case. Lori Peterson, is she white or black?
She don't know. I'd have to look it up.
These judges, I'm sorry. I was with a judge last night, Judge Pruce. What a wonderful man. These judges need to feel the pain. Everybody does. Whether you're a politician or a judge, everybody thinks they're saving the world. This mayor. Till it happens to them, till their kid gets raped, or their daughter gets punched across the face, or their mom gets thrown in front of a moving subway. Then they always all of a sudden have an epiphany, like Geraldo Rivera, when he couldn't find his daughter in Paris during the ISIS attacks. For about a week, he came to the realization, liberals are no good. Now he's back to being a douchebag, and I love Geraldo, but he is. But it has to happen to them, or they just don't care. So Lori Peterson,
she's
congratulations.
White, by the way.
Yeah, well, white Jews are terrible, too. These Jewish judges, they're the absolute worst. The absolute worst. There was another judge involved with this guy, too. If you read this story, I want to mention her name, too. But Lori Peterson, congratulations. All right, we got traffic coming up next. It is time now for the 77 WABC Clip of the Day. Listen to the Katz Roundtable. My good buddy John Katzimatidis, he's the man. That's where common sense prevails. Always tells both sides of the story. Comes your way every Sunday morning starting at 8 or listen anytime on the 77 WABC app. Here, John and Rita talk to my friend Dr. Peter Mikolos about cancer.
Cervical cancer screening should start at age 25. Really, they say not to do it under 25 because it's extremely rare to have cervical cancer under 25. But the Pap test, named after Dr. Papanikolaou, which has saved millions of women's lives, is a test where they swab an area of the cervix in women, and you can find things out early. Another thing is that people between the ages of 25 and 65 can get a HPV virus, which is a human papillomavirus, and that can be done when you have your GYN exam. And you can catch the precursor to cervical cancer.
This is Sid on Sports.
Oh, my goodness!
Sponsored by Fearless Boilers on 77 WABC.
Justin Ellick here with your bottom of the hour sports update, sponsored by Pete Morgan of Fearless Boilers. Go to fearlessboilers.com. PavilionTankless.com to find a dealer near you. They're the world's best-built boilers. Start here on the hardwood at the Garden. Jalen Brunson notched his 11th 40-point game of the season to carry the Knicks into the number two seed in the Eastern Conference with a 120-119 overtime victory over the Chicago Bulls in New York's regular season finale. The Knicks finished 15-32, their best season since going 54-28 and also earning a number two seed in 2012-2013. They moved past Milwaukee after the Bucks lost earlier yesterday in Orlando and will await the winner of the play-in game between Philadelphia and Miami on Wednesday. Brunson finished with 40 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists, tied Patrick Ewing for the second most 40-point games in one season by a Knicks player. He finished the season averaging 28.7 points per game, tying Carmelo Anthony for the third-best mark in franchise history. As for the Nets, they wrapped out their season with a 107-86 loss in Philly to the Sixers. They end with a record of 32-50, missing the playoffs there, obviously. On the diamond in Cleveland, the Yankees blew a 2-run lead and lost 8-7 in 10 innings to the Indians. They dropped to 12-4 overall with the loss, still one of the best starts.
Guardians.
So
do I. I say Indians all the time, and I say Redskins all the time. God. I'm not saying Guardians. I'm not saying Commanders. They're the Indians and Redskins. And guess what? I still get the state for free at Mohegan Sun.
Yeah. Did you see also, regarding the Redskins, like the National Committee of like Native Americans or something is actually suing the team. I don't know if you saw that a couple weeks ago.
Why, they're mad?
They want them to change the name back to Redskins.
Yeah, the only guy I know that was really upset is Phil Sims. And last I checked out of Morehead State, Kentucky, Phil Sims, not exactly a Native American.
Yanks. They lose. They'll see if they can rebound in the opener of a three-game set with the Blue Jays in Toronto. First pitch there, scheduled for 7:05 p.m. As for the Mets, they outlasted the Kansas City Royals for a 2-1 victory in their weekend series finale. Up next for the Mets, a three-game home set against the Pittsburgh Pirates. First pitch there, 7:10 tonight. Adrian Hauser tabbed to make the start. After a quiet day yesterday on the ice, all three local squads back in action tonight, just days remaining in the regular season. Islanders and Devils go head-to-head in Newark at 7 p.m. with the Islanders currently hanging on to third place in the Metro Division, 3 points up on Washington and Philadelphia for the seventh seed in the East. As for the Rangers, they'll welcome in the Ottawa Senators for a 7:30 p.m. puck drop tonight. Still tops in the NHL with 100 points. Finally, from...
No, they have 112 points.
112, right.
And if they win tonight, they actually wrap up the President's Cup. If they don't win tonight, then the door is open for Carolina to get it with a win at Columbus tomorrow, and there's still an outside shot that Boston, with wins over Washington and Ottawa, can get it too. But very simply, Rangers win tonight. They get the President's Cup. If they don't, Carolina's got a great shot to get it tomorrow.
There you go. Big game tonight, 7:30. Puck drop. Finally, from the links in Augusta, Georgia, American world number one Scottie Scheffler lived up to his ranking at this year's Masters Tournament, winning a second green jacket in 3 years with a score of 11 under par. That's sports sponsored by Pete Morgan, Peerless Boilers. Go to PeerlessBoilers.com, PavilionTankless.com to find a dealer near you. They're the world's best-built boilers. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
Entertaining and informative.
Oh, you're my best friend.
77 WABC.
Any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion, they hate everything about Israel, and they should be ashamed of themselves.
One of the greatest things my friend, former President Trump, ever said, and man, is he right. Any Jewish person who would vote for Joe Biden, or quite frankly, any Democrat, to me, is a disgrace. They're not misled. They're a disgrace. By the way, my friend Donald Trump, probably getting up about now. Good morning, Mr. President, on his way to court here in New York City. Talk about disgrace at the very, very top of the list. This fat, stupid, racist district attorney, Alvin Bragg. I could use the word disgrace on any given show 100 times. You know, it's a disgrace, Joe Biden, for trying to pull the wool over the eyes of Americans, acting as if America came to save the day for the Israelis on Saturday night, when in fact, it is my opinion, and I'm very smart, that he knew everything all along. He helped orchestrate that bogus Iran attack. It's my opinion. And how I formed that opinion was, A, watching what was happening and realizing that all these countries, including us, were ready to go, intercepting 99% of the missiles. Secondly, Joe Biden's response right after, minutes after, hey, you got the win, that's it, we're done. And thirdly, I got to give this guy credit, Alex Trayman, the CEO of JNS.org. If you heard Alex on this show Friday morning, day before the attack, Alex said, quote, Biden spoke to Iran. Don't be surprised if the Americans are involved in this. Did you or did you not intimate that the day before the attack, Alex Trayman?
Hi, Sid. I mean, we had already seen reports in the Wall Street Journal that were leaked from the U.S. that they had predicted specifically that there would be a counterattack and that it would be within the next 24 to 48 hours. They had already moved their equipment and got the U.K. and France also to move equipment into the area for this attack. So, yes, it does seem as though they knew that the attack was going to happen. We saw in Biden's statement immediately after the attack that Iran only targeted military targets. How did the United States know that only military targets were targeted? I mean, overhead when these things were being blown up, and I could see it from my porch, it didn't necessarily look like they were only targeting military targets, but it seems as though the United States knew that this was going to happen, set up the missile defenses, and if the missile defenses would be successful in shooting things out of the sky, that Biden would say that it was a victory and would suggest that Israel shouldn't respond further. So there's a lot of indications that the United States was coordinated in this attack. The question is whether it was by intelligence, direct intelligence only, or were they actually communicating?
Well, I saw two different stories last night. One came from the number two in Iran, who said that the United States were communicating with Iran. Another story I saw this morning says that Turkey ended up being kind of the middleman between Iran and the United States. Either way, the United States knew all of it. They knew it was going to happen. They were going to make sure that nobody died and no 10-year-old girl got hurt. And you never know. Look, one of these things can fall out of the sky and kill somebody. We know that. But it was pretty much treated, this attack, like you said, as let's go up to some military installations and not kill a civilian on the street so that Biden can claim a win for Israel, pat himself on the back, and keep Iran from getting bombed from here to tomorrow by Bibi Netanyahu. It's clear. It's obvious to me. I don't know, Alex. It's obvious to me.
I think it's also really important to stress that this wasn't a minor attack. Now, remember, this is coming in the aftermath of Israel striking at an IRGC Revolutionary Guards Corps annex to an Iranian consulate in Syria, where Israel took out with a singular airstrike seven generals, including top generals of Iran and its IRGC. But they did not bomb with a missile like one target. Okay, they sent the largest drone attack in the history of military warfare at Israel. They sent 110 ballistic missiles that get to Israel from Iran in about 10 minutes. Okay, so that's very fast. And these ballistic missiles that I've seen pictures of some of them that landed in Israel after they were intercepted, we're talking about 20 yards long, these things, and with half a ton payloads on them, okay, that each one of these things could take out an entire city block if it would be successful in hitting. And they sent 110 of them at the exact same time, and at the exact same time that the drones were supposed to arrive, at the exact same time that another 36 cruise missiles were supposed to arrive. So this was a massive, massive missile and drone barrage. Could have done immense, immense damage, and it is only due to the fact that Israel and its partners have superior air defenses that 99% of what they fired didn't strike.
I agree with you. I'm not going to downplay it to the point of calling it a minor attack just based upon the weaponry you just mentioned. It was not a minor attack. I mean, again, I think that Israel and our partners knew that there'd be very little to no casualties. I think we knew that. But in terms of weaponry, sure. So if I was to say to Bibi Netanyahu this morning, listen, nobody died. There's a 10-year-old little girl who I believe is still in the hospital. Maybe a few others are in the hospital, but nobody died. So do you want to just kind of let this one go? If Bibi said to me yes, I'd be very disappointed. And my argument would be, but wait a second. Look at all this weaponry, to your point, Alex. Look at all this weaponry they just sent to Israel. They could have easily killed a ton of people. You can't just let this go. Let's put Rafa aside for 1 second. I would hope Bibi would now come back in Iran. Joe Biden said, we're not going to help you. You do that, you're on your own. What do you think Bibi does?
You know, that's the big question here. And we're seeing already statements from Yoav Gallant, who's the defense minister, and Benny Gantz, who is another member of the war cabinet, both saying that now is the time to create an international alliance or an international coalition against Iran. And to me, when I see those types of statements coming out, it kind of indicates that Israel is being held back from attacking. You know, America is saying, don't do it. Israel saying, well, what are you going to give us if we don't do it? And, you know, what I'm reading between the lines in these kind of statements is, you know, we're going to get countries to censure Iran for what they did, to say bad things against Iran at the UN Security Council, potentially to inflict sanctions that already should have been on Iran, back on Iran, but that there might not be an attack. And you hear Gantz and others saying, you know, we reserve the right to attack when we want, how we want. It also seems to indicate that an attack might not be forthcoming, and certainly not forthcoming in the immediate days ahead.
But you did start off the statement by saying because of the American pressure. So this is just your opinion, obviously, but do you feel like in your heart of hearts that if Bibi was allowed to do what he wanted, forget about Benny Gantz, if Bibi was allowed to do what he wanted, he would absolutely start bombing their oil fields or nuclear facilities, but you believe that the Americans are the ones that continue to pressure Bibi into not doing what his heart tells him to do, yes?
Oh, we've seen that consistently. The U.S. didn't want Israel to launch a ground operation inside the Gaza Strip. The U.S. didn't want Israel to go into the Al-Shifa hospital in central Gaza. They have been blocking the Israeli campaign in Rafah. They blocked Israel from attacking Hezbollah. And they're very clear that they don't support an Israeli attack on Iran at this point. Yes, I think that there's been immense, immense U.S. pressure. And it just keeps intensifying. We don't really know explicitly what they're being threatened with, but we can assume that it's significant, and it is very much affecting the way Israel is conducting the war effort.
And now, what about Rafah? Where are we there? Does this, you know, I was watching you on television on Saturday night. You did a great live hit from your terrace across the street here, and the anchors were saying all night long that this Iran attack now, Israel has no choice but to attack Iran, which now you've said you doubt it, so do I, and go into Rafah. So is it safe to assume that Iran may not happen, but Rafah definitely will? Or at this point, can you assume nothing based on the pressure from Joe Biden?
I think you can assume little. You know, Netanyahu might try to, you know, might try to say, well, if you're not giving us Iran, then give us Rafah. I personally don't think Rafah is a prize. Okay, you know, that's not a consolation. That's something that has to be done because of where Israel is in the war with Hamas. At the same time, it's something that doesn't have to necessarily get done this second. Okay, the threat of Hamas to Israel today is completely contained. They can't commit another.
Let me stop you for a second. If you believe the hostages are alive, and I don't, I believe some of these teenage girls are alive because I believe they've been sold into sex slavery and who knows what they're doing to these poor girls. I don't think there's 50 hostages left. I really don't. But if you believe these hostages are alive, then Rafah needs to be done as soon as possible because that's where they are. No?
It needs to be done as soon as possible. It should have been done already weeks ago and months ago. But the situation has now changed, okay, because Iran has again launched, you know, one of the largest volleys in the history of military on the state of Israel, and has completely changed the equation. And if you think that now is your time to strike Iran, today Israel has the legitimacy to hit Iran, to hit Iran hard. If they wait a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, they're not going to have the opportunity to do that. So, you know, if I'm in the military in the war cabinet right now, I'm reassessing the threats, and I'm saying to myself, this Rafah operation can happen now. It can happen later. The threat to the home front is contained. Yes, you're right about the hostages. Israel hasn't succeeded in getting the hostages back until now. They think the only way to get them back at this point really is through negotiations. Those have fallen apart. So the chances of getting them back is very, very slim. I would have to put Rafah on the back burner right now, making sure I do it and do it later. But I would be taking this war to phase two right now and dealing with Iran and potentially dealing with Hezbollah, which has 200,000 long-range missiles pointed at Israel, and saving Rafah for later.
Tell me what it's like this morning in Jerusalem. It's actually not morning by you. It's, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So you wake up in the morning. I know you live in Jerusalem. I've been to your house. And, you go over to your office there in central Jerusalem. And, again, you're only about 36 hours removed from being attacked with missiles and drones. What is Israel like right now on this Monday afternoon?
Right now, it's pretty normal. You know, so we also had this attack telegraphed. We knew it was coming. We knew when it was coming. When they started the attack, the drones that they sent, they take 2 hours to get over to Israel, and it was announced both by Iran and by Israel that these drones were on their way. So people understood, and we're talking about midnight when these things were launched, or just before midnight. Every Israeli was up on Saturday night. Everybody was waiting in anticipation to see what would happen. You know, first we get the notice that the drones are being launched. They should be here in 2 hours. Then about an hour in, we get message that cruise missiles have been launched. They should be here in about an hour. Then we're waiting to see what happens. Then we hear that the ballistic missiles have been launched, and they might be here in about 12 minutes. So great anticipation, great anxiety. The whole country was in a collective fear of what could happen, waiting, and we're literally watching the Star Wars overhead as this is happening.
I mean, as it's happening overhead, as you're talking about, Alex, the sirens I could hear because I called you on Judah, Yehuda Honickman. I can hear the sirens in the background, and a lot of you folks, including Yehuda's whole family, ran to bomb shelters.
Yeah, I mean, the whole country was in bomb shelter, but I'll tell you that we started to hear the booms and the interceptions before we heard the air raid sirens. Okay, so I was standing on my porch. Like, I was on the porch most of the night just watching the F-35s go in all kind of different directions. And then all of a sudden, I start to see missiles and getting intercepted. It looked like it was right overhead. And only after I'd seen about a dozen of them, I'm thinking to myself, wow, I should probably get inside because there's shrapnel that could come down and hit, as we saw a seven-year-old girl got hit in the head with shrapnel in the desert. And only then the sirens come on. I'm taking video of what's happening. My wife's screaming at me, we got to get into the bomb shelter. So yeah. I came inside. But after those 10 minutes, and it was basically not even 10 minutes where these missiles were being intercepted, Iran had announced via its representative at the United Nations that its attack was over. And then Israel also concluded that the attack was finished. And already by Sunday morning, there was no intelligence of another impending attack. So what do Israelis do? We're very resilient, and we just got back to work. And now Israelis are just out on the streets, going to work, doing what's normal, and getting ready for Passover, which is in a week. So a lot of people are at the supermarkets buying all the stuff that they need for Passover, and it's kind of like, in a way, like it never even happened.
you know, you mentioned Passover, and Justin wanted to put in my open today the story about how the NYPD has now put extra folks on synagogues, and I told him not to do it. And I told him not to do it because it's nonsense. They do that stuff all the time. Anytime there's an attack on Israel, on the Jews, they put extra cops at temples and whatever. And to me, it's just a formality. But for you guys, as you just mentioned, Pesach being a week away and knowing that these animals would love nothing more. I mean, they ruined, what was it, Sukkot or Shavuos? What was that, that Saturday morning when they attacked you on October the 7th?
Yeah, it was Simchat Torah.
Simchat Torah, that's right.
Our week,
right.
The last day of our week-long Sukkot festival. So
right.
We, every 6 months we have a week-long festival. That was Sukkot, and now we're about to have another festival, Passover, which is a week-long festival here in Israel. The entire country's off. It's a big vacation. Everybody goes to camping and hotels and hikes and visiting friends.
But wouldn't you agree that this that at this time, again, coming off the Simchat Torah attack, that Pesach would be a, for them, for these animals, would be a great time to attack? Or do you think that that's probably not going to happen?
Yeah, definitely a big risk and kind of ironic because when Israel was perpetrating the war in Gaza, you know, we were asked, you know, to take our foot off the gas and to try to negotiate a ceasefire for the Islamic holy month of Ramadan, right? So we get attacked in our holy month and we're told not to counterattack on their holy month. And
wow.
Now, as you said, we're coming up on our next big festival. And a lot of anticipation. You know, there could be intifada-style violence here in Judea and Samaria. We just had a 14-year-old boy was killed on Friday. He was just shepherding some sheep, never came home. They found his body mutilated.
Oh, my God.
And murdered. You know, and you didn't even hear about it because you only heard about the Iran threat. So, yes, there's big threats in Judea and Samaria, terrorism. Hezbollah could start doing what they're doing. You know, Iran sent these missiles. We don't know what else they could send now. And if you don't attack back, you're basically setting a new status quo that anytime you hit something in Syria or Iran makes a movement someplace, if you counterstrike, then all of a sudden Iran could launch ballistic missiles, and you've now established that as the new status quo, the acceptable behavior, and it's very dangerous.
Well, I wish I was there. I had such me and Danielle and Avon Gabe had such a wonderful Shabbat dinner with you and Sippy and your beautiful family. I wish I was there for that first Seder, but we'll talk again a bunch before that happens, and continue to stay safe. You're just a wealth of information, a dear friend, and so important to me, New York, and this show. Once again, folks, any information you need about Israel, the Israel-Hamas war, now the Israel-Iran war, I recommend you go to JNS.org, please. That's the only place to go, JNS.org. My dear friend here, Alex Trayman, he is the CEO. And you had a chance to spend some time on Saturday night with my buddy Mark Levin.
I did on Saturday afternoon, actually. I was at a bar mitzvah that Mark was attending with his wife and his stepson, who's also a good friend of mine. And he talked very highly about you, Sid. So, you know, if the great one is saying good things about you, that's a big compliment.
Yeah, no, we talk almost every day. No, that was Ron Dermer's son's bar mitzvah. Alex Trayman, I love you, buddy. Great job. Continue to stay safe. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Sid.
My man, Alex Trayman, folks, the CEO of JNS.org. That wraps up hour number one, a pretty good hour, with a big hour number two on the way. The great Curtis Lee, well, he's always amazing. He had a busy weekend. The Guardian Angels were out there in full force, trying to keep these illegals out of my neighborhood. Curtis Sliwa and Alan Dershowitz. Big 8 o'clock hour, 7 o'clock hour, excuse me. Big 7 o'clock hour. Keep it right here.
So much better with two. Now I'm out in the cold and I'm getting old. Standing here waiting on you. It'll be alright when the morning comes.
Hi. Hi, it's Ernie Anastas. You know, your thoughts can affect how you feel, and how you feel can impact your thoughts. Addressing your mind and body connection is the key to improving your overall wellness. Bergen Newbridge Medical Center is the largest hospital in New Jersey, providing comprehensive, equitable, compassionate, and high-quality emergency inpatient and outpatient medical care, plus mental health services and substance use disorder treatment. The Bergen Newbridge team can address your total health needs in one convenient location. Call 201-225-7130 for an appointment or newbridgehealth.org.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
What you say, just a friend.
Oh, you my best friend.
77 WABC.
Oi.
Some feathers in my hand. 7:21. Gonna be a summer day today. I can't wait. Now I can't take the ferry home. Day like today, 76 and sunny. Man, I love that ferry. Stick it up your ass, Curtis, and your ridiculous subsidies. You're gonna pay for that bitch as long as I live in Rockaway. That's the end of it. You can yell and scream all you want and piss off Mary Glynn and Margaret Powers and Paul King and all of us. But now the damn ferry broke. It crashed. So I got to take the A train home today and put my life into my hands. Well, thank God I got Michael Kemper out there protecting me, right, Curtis? But I got to take the A train today to Broad Channel and then take that shuttle and then walk home from 116th Street, which is a smelly ass. And I got a great picture from Curtis and the Guardian Angels. They were actually on 116th Street this weekend. You know, I saw a picture of Joanne Arriola. She was at the Cross Bay Diner last night. She was saying, oh, we love our local businesses. First of all, Mike, the owner, likes me more. Trust me, Joanne. Second of all, nobody cares what you think. I swear to God, I am so disillusioned, disenchanted with all these people. And most of it is their fault, but a lot of it is Curtis's fault. Because Curtis does a great job of opening my eyes. And a lot of you folks out there who tell me every day get stopped and they tell me, man, I love you and Curtis together. With that said, big ratings on the Rip and Read, noon to one every weekday afternoon. Does a great job hosting overnights all weekend long. And he's here with me about this time every weekday morning. He is the icon, the legend, the guardian angel, great Curtis Sliwa. Good morning, Curtis.
And I knew you would deliver, King David. So I told the Gentiles here at WABC because Kevin Drosch, our program director, has left with management ownership. They're out in Vegas, National Association of Broadcasters. John Katzmatidis is trying to buy up stations, you know, to compete with George Soros. Good, good. We applaud them. Do it for America.
Buy some Florida stations. I'll get you big ratings and sales overnight.
But Kevin is not here. So I told all the Gentiles here, don't you dare mention that this was a Dino De Laurentiis spectacular. Leave it to King David. Because if I say it, if any of the Gentiles here say what we obviously saw unfold,
yeah,
we will be called anti-Semites. Hashem did this. 99% the Iron Dome worked. Yeah, you keep believing a 7-year-old in the desert got hit with shrapnel, the only casualty.
No, she didn't even die.
I know. You keep believing that. You know, when I was raised, I was told the chosen people, the Jews, are the smartest. And they were. They got all the awards, the academic awards. They were the valedictorian. I mean, they scored 100 plus, 1,800 on the SATs, no question. Smarter than anyone else, Albert Einstein, theory of general relativity, E equals MC squared, right? Can you all be so stupid to believe that you knocked out 99% of the incoming kamikaze drones? They fly under the radar. We see that every day in the Ukraine, right? Yeah, yeah. How's that working out over there, right? Can't you really believe this nonsense?
They do. I mean, it was met with horror when I put together this video yesterday morning from the same exact chair in my living room that I did the video on October the 8th, the day after the initial Hamas attack. Same chair. And I actually intimated yesterday morning that the United States was in on this whole attack. When I say in on it, they knew about it. They wanted to make sure that Iran went out of their way not to kill people. They wanted to make sure that the war did not escalate. They told Bibi in less than 5 minutes, Mr. Netanyahu, you go any further, we are not in. And these Jewish people are like, you're telling me that our own government? I'm like, yes, you dumb bastards.
Yes.
I am telling you that.
Oh, Hashem saved us, Hashem. Get out of here. Let me tell you something. These coordinates were already given to the United States, to Israel, to Saudi Arabia, and Jordan to knock out these drones, ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and not by Iran, but by their surrogate nation. That's right, Dick Cheney, still looking for those weapons of mass destruction. Iraq. Iraq is allied with
Turkey
Iran.
Turkey, too. Iraq and Turkey.
Of course. Yeah. But you understand, this was all coordinated. Everybody looks good. Everybody, all Jews are saying, our IDF fended off 99% of the attack. You see, right? America, Joe Biden, that's right. You don't need to retaliate. You did such an outstanding job. Then there was Kirby, the spokesperson. It was like better than sex for him. Like, oh, it was so outstanding, right? The Saudis, who in the Persian Gulf campaign couldn't hit a airliner if their life depended on it. Oh, you see, and the Jordanian. Oh, you see, everybody looks good.
They look great. And by the way, I'll mention this every hour as my friend Donald Trump gets set to go to court. If you think the Jordanians and Saudi Arabia all of a sudden loves the Jews, you're an idiot. But you can thank Donald Trump today for the Abraham Accords. That's why Jordan, Saudi Arabia acted on Israel's side because of Donald Trump's Abraham Accords.
And right now people are saying, yeah, but what's in it for Iran? This is the first time Iran actually struck Israel from Iran. But they couldn't. I mean, they might as well have been out on the aircraft carrier flagging, you know, for the F-35s as they were circling and just knocking them out. Iran looks good. The Ayatollahs look good. They were already celebrating in Tehran.
Oh, yeah.
Before the first drone ballistic missile or cruise missile hit.
Now, they don't look good. They actually look a little embarrassing today, but they don't care.
Oh, to their own people, right. They look great.
Right. They don't care. Their people celebrated. By the way, not just their own people. There were celebrations in Toronto. Now, I wasn't out on Saturday night. I know you were, but as I was home watching all this unfold and coming up with this theory that the Americans were in on it, Danielle said to me, I'm sure they're celebrating in Bay Ridge or somewhere.
Let me tell you,
were they?
Some of them, you know, singing, from the river to the sea, let's wipe out the Jews in perpetuity, unless they get on a plane at Ben Gurion Airport and make the last flight to Boca Raton, kill them, annihilate. Of course they were celebrating. But let me take you back. Slowly I turn, step by step. 1991. George Bush, 41, puts together the greatest coalition, Arabic nations. We're going to crush Saddam Hussein unless he leaves Kuwait. So Saddam Hussein says, you know what? I'm going to attack Israel with my Scud missiles, because if Israel retaliates, then I get all my Arab friends who hate Jews on board with me. 41 Scud missiles were poured into where?
Israel.
Tel Aviv, yep. And Haifa.
And they were told by President Bush, don't you dare do a thing about it. Now, Americans helped. We fired Patriot missiles back at the Scuds. But if your point is, you're making the comparison that Bush 41 told Israel, much like Biden is doing right now, to sit on their hands, you're 1,000% correct.
4,000 buildings were damaged, 28 totally destroyed in Israel. Israelis died, not because they were hit by the debris, but because the gas masks were not functioning correctly, and they died from that. And you know, how could you forget that? I thought Jews are smart. You're the chosen people. Arista. I walk into PS114. I said to my mother, Francesca, Mom, how come every name up in Arista is a Jewish name? She goes, because they study harder than you. You're too busy out there playing stickball, boxball, stoopball, Johnny on the Pony, hot wiring cars with your cousins, Lenny Beans, Bianchino, and Joey G, the G from Howard Beach. And she was right. But now the Asians are smarter. They're doing better in school. What the hell is wrong with you Jews? Hashem, this is great. The IDF, 99%. You had the coordinates. Everybody comes out a winner in this, and the price of oil goes up. So the Saudis make more money, the Russians make more money, Iran makes more money, huh? Just follow the money.
That's all you got to do. So I'm glad that you're with me on this. I knew you were right away yesterday.
Yeah, but we had to let you do it.
We had to let King David launch it. I did it for 2 days, but you just did a great job adding that information. You're right about Bush 41. Now let's move to some local stuff. Of course, I got a ton of pictures from you yesterday. Again, everywhere from 116th Street, standing outside of King's Plaza. Remember, I live over that bridge. I'm maybe 10 minutes away from King's Plaza. It is a mess. Why were you there yesterday? What did you guys see?
Well, number one, we had been organizing with the civic groups, as you know, in meeting in Marine Park for a long time to bring together the coalition back to stop Floyd Bennett Field. I have video. I went over to the tents on runway 19. I'm going to share that with you first, Sid. I always break the news with Sid in the morning, and then I follow up with the rip and read in the afternoon. You're going to see them constructing more tents. You are going to see
tents.
Them. Yes. You're going to see them.
How many people
material.
Are there right now?
They claim 2,000. Our head count is 3,000, and they're bringing in more. They bring the buses in. They unload the buses, and when the buses leave, they're empty. So they try to say, oh, no, we're swapping them out. You know, they only get to spend 3 months in the tent.
But here's where I'm confused. Didn't Joanne Arriola say that she had the right attorney, that she was going to stop this, that she was going to make sure that all these things that are happening and have been happening wasn't going to happen? So what happened?
And who told you that was all Fugazi?
You did.
And then I was screamed at, yelled at, no, we're going to court. We got to put together a coalition. I said, you have purposely thrown a wrench into our momentum. You, Joanne Arriola, are an Eric Adams Republican. This is exactly what he wanted
She's
you to do.
She's not even a Donald Trump Republican. As far as I know, and I speak to a lot of people as you do, Curtis, you and I speak to the same people, Joanne Arriola is not even a Donald Trump supporter. What kind of pathetic Republican is that? And let me say this. You talk about momentum. Folks need to know this. Curtis, along with the rebels, guys like Johnny Tobacco, Scott Lobato, all those brave Staten Island folks, had just gotten wins, big wins, Yankee wins on Staten Island, was bringing that same momentum to Brooklyn and Queens when Arriola and the rest of them shot him right in the face.
Sid, we had momentum. You and I, we brought thousands of people out to Floyd Bennett Field. And then Joanne Arriola got the phone call from Eric Adams. You got to stop this. You got to jump in. You got to do an intervention. Tell them you're going to court. Don't share any information. Tell them, hey, you should have protests 24 hours a day. What are you, crazy lady? With winter coming on, it's mostly out the caucus over there. You know, they're drinking their Geritol. They're taking Bengay baths. Purposely destroyed our effort. We're putting it back. Yesterday was the first part of that in Brooklyn. Great turnout. Hundreds from throughout Mill Basin, Marine Park, Georgetown, Canarsie. They came even in from Bensonhurst, where they had a successful protest at 18th Avenue and 20th Street. Democrats and Republicans, we're putting it back together again. You know, Humpty Dumpty took a great fall. We're putting it back. And the Sullivan brothers were there again. Michael, Tom, first in war, first in peace. I'm going out there to the Irish Riviera tonight. We got to put the rally together to get the Irish Riviera on board.
I actually saw Brian Sullivan yesterday, another brother. He was a cop for a long time at the parade. Vista Place, right across the street from Marty Feeney's Adrian's Restaurant in Broad Channel. He's another great Sullivan like Michael and Thomas and Danny and that whole crew. And I saw their brother Eddie at Harbor Light on Friday night. So I had a big Sullivan weekend as well as you did. And you really believe, Curtis, you really believe in your heart of hearts you can put this thing back together and enjoy success.
Yes, we could stop this. We just got to eliminate the politicals. But you went to Baruch College, right, with J-Lo?
I graduated from there. Okay. I didn't go with her, but we both went to that school, yes.
You were good with math, right? Good with a number two pencil.
Not really. I had an Asian kid sitting next to me, and he actually took most of my tests.
Well, that figures, right? They're better than the Jews. I want you to listen to Eric Adams. A year ago, remember, on this program, I was saying 90,000 packages a day get stolen. 90,000 FedEx, Amazon, USPS, UPS packages. City Hall said I was lying. The police department said I was lying. Even some of the package distributors say Curtis Lee was making this up. The other day, what did Eric Adams say?
When you look at the surge of at-home deliveries, you're also looking at the surge of theft. almost 90,000 packages being reported stolen or lost every day in this city.
Now, I want you, Sid, because you're a Jew and you did better in math than me. I failed math.
Yeah.
365 days a year, right?
Right, right.
Times it by 90,000. Do you know how many packages are stolen in this city?
That would be about 2.8 million or 28 million.
32 million packages.
There you go.
And not one arrest.
No, we have these, we call them porch pirates. You call them that.
Yes.
And my good buddy Sean Cerrone, who owns my gym, Burn Fitness, he's a great American. He sends me videos, Curtis, almost every day of one of these porch pirates at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
On one of my neighbor's porches.
Yep.
Stealing stuff. Almost every day.
No arrests.
Nothing.
So it's easy to say Eric Adams' perception of crime. Of course. 32 million thefts of packages. You won't let the cops make one arrest. Shoplifting galore all throughout the city. Perception of crime. And you know where I finished my day yesterday, Sid? And nobody joined me other than the Guardian Angels. I promised you I would be out at the 101st Precinct on Mott Avenue in Far Rockaway. 21 days since police officer Jonathan Diller was assassinated and executed. Shame on the 101 Precinct. They have a microscopic picture of him up on the door like it was the size of a mezuzah. And that's it. We have already forgotten. 3 weeks later, nobody talks about Jonathan Diller. God, what is wrong with all of you people out there? On behalf of Stephanie Diller and her beautiful son, how can we forget just 3 weeks later, not one person showed up with me and the Guardian Angels to give tribute? Only Sid is talking about Jonathan Diller, his legacy, and all the cops who have been killed before in the line of duty, and Curtis Sliwa. And hey, Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, think you're going to crawl out of your grave and make a political comeback? Your parole board released 37 cop killers. Where were you yesterday, huh? On your yacht in Southampton, coming up with a new spin? You are un disgraziato. You are a shanda.
Michelangelo, when I'm lying in my bed, little angels hang above my head.
If you had an accident, trust Gabo Law, personal injury and medical malpractice attorneys with decades of experience who will provide the attention you deserve and deliver the best possible results in the shortest amount of time. Gabo Law has recovered millions for their clients, and they will be able to help you. But don't take our word for it. Read their 5-star reviews from former clients on Google, Avvo, and Facebook. Call Gabo Law today, 800-560-0214 for a free consultation. Or email them at info@gabolaw.com. That's GABOlaw.com. Gabo Law, where winning is no accident.
Entertaining and informative.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
I don't know what time my friend Trump goes to court today. I want to say about 9 o'clock. Probably listening to me right now in the Trump Tower. If you are, Mr. President, just know that a lot of us are with you this morning. Don't be fooled by the blue city, blue state, this repulsive district attorney, this repugnant attorney general, these horrible Democrat politicians. Don't be fooled. Mr. President, this is still your city. Still. 40 Wall Street is still yours. Trump Tower is still yours. And a lot of us still love you and really are hurt angry and hurt by what you have to go through for the next, who knows what, 6 to 8 weeks. It's just not fair. But you'll get the last laugh because you're going to win come November and put a lot of these assholes in their place. Because as they say, Mr. President, karma is a bitch. Alan Dershowitz coming up next.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
Entertaining and informative.
Oh, you're my best friend.
77 WABC.
Big guest list still to come your way. Former Trump ambassador to Israel, dear friend and huge fan of mine, huge fan. Spoke to him yesterday morning. David Friedman will join me coming up at 8:15. Steve Bannon, 8:45. Dove Hykind. Last night I had the honor of giving Dove and his beautiful wife, Shani, a lovely award at a great dinner. The shul in Woodmere, Rabbi Bloomstein's shul, had a dinner last night. We handed out three awards. Dove will join me at 9:15, and Rockland County, Mr. GOP Mike Lawler at 9:35. But I wanted to bring Alan Dershowitz back. He was on Friday, and of course, he was part of that dream team that were able to convince the jury to come back with a not guilty verdict for that lowlife O.J. Simpson. But I want to talk to Dershowitz about a variety of issues. So here he is, the greatest constitutional attorney ever, and my dear friend, Alan Dershowitz. Dersh, good morning, pal. How are you?
I'm doing great. And you? I wish in a couple of hours from now we could watch the actual trial of Donald Trump. I don't know what they're trying to hide from us, why we don't have live television coverage, gavel to gavel, of one of the most important and significant cases in American history. It's a scandal that we're not being able to watch it.
Well, why do you think it is? I mean, look, from a legal standpoint, and this is where you're the best maybe ever, you all know when I speak to Joseph Tacopino, Arthur Idala, I've got all the greats on this show. Everybody has said the same thing. Based on legal merit, this is the most laughable case they've ever seen. So are they aware of that? Are they worried the public is aware of that?
Yeah. I mean, it's the worst case in 60 years of practice and teaching criminal law I've ever seen, and it may very well result in a conviction because you're going to have 12 jurors who voted against Donald Trump, who hate Donald Trump, and who lied to get on the jury. And the questions that are being asked the jurors are absurd. They're being asked, well, if you hate Donald Trump so much, will it influence your verdict in the case? Well, of course it will. And of course they're going to deny it. So what we're not seeing is a total distortion of the American legal system. And when the legal system is distorted this way, we have the right to see it and judge for ourselves, not read about it in the New York Times and hear about it on CNN, who will present a completely distorted view. Do you know that in the O.J. Simpson case, the people who actually watched the trial on television were less surprised at the outcome than the people who read about it in the New York Times and saw it on CNN? Because they missed the major point. They didn't report on the fact that although there was a mountain of evidence, enough to clearly convict him, the police foolishly tampered with one piece of evidence, a sock. Officer Van Atta poured blood on the sock when it was laying flat. We were able to prove that because the blood contained a chemical that's not found in the human body, but that's put in test tubes. So, and it also, the blood splatter showed that the blood was put on the sock when it was lying flat. The Times hardly reported that, but the people who saw it said, oh, my God, if one piece of evidence was tampered with that way, can we trust the rest of the evidence? That's why the jury acquitted. The jury didn't find him innocent. The jury found that the prosecution had failed to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt by legitimate and admissible evidence. So people should be able to watch the justice system or the injustice system at work instead of reading them. At the end of the day, CNN is going to report, this is a strong case. The Times is going to report, this was a strong case. You and I know, and the people would know if they were able to watch it, this is an incredibly weak, politically driven case.
Not only a weak, politically driven case, but confusing for lay people like me, because watching people like you talking about how this is really a state case that's turned into a federal case, maybe it's the other way around. I want to put you on hold, Alan, and if you can, explain to my audience how what looked like either state or federal charges ended up going the other way, just so Alvin Bragg can build a case. We'll come right back with the great attorney Alan Dershowitz on Trump trial day here in New York. Plus, Israel gets attacked, and yes, who will get OJ's estate? All that and more with the great Alan Dershowitz. We'll be right back.
'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. Should 5% appear too small? Be thankful I don't take it all. I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. If you drive a car, call tax.
Oi!
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
La 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 la. Sha la la la. Sha la 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 la. Sha.
The Ramones here, Louie telling me that Joey Ramone, you know, I met Joey Ramone once in Brooklyn at Lamore's. Lamore's was a big-time rock and roll place. I guess it was, you know, Brooklyn's version of CBGB's. I don't know. But I met Joey Ramone there once.
You were at Lamore. Wow. Lamore.
Yeah. Yeah, I was at Lamore. He died today. It was his birthday today. What's...
Died. He was 2001.
So he did die on this day.
49. He was 49.
He was 49.
Jeez. He had lymphatic cancer, if I remember.
Ay, ay, ay. Terrible. Terrible. All right, let's get back to Alan Dershowitz. You know, Alan, folks out there who don't follow the law closely, they know that President Trump is on trial. Everybody I surround myself with is disgusted by it because those are my friends. But they can't figure out if this is federal, if this is state. They don't pay that much attention. Can you explain to these people how these charges were brought in the first place and how somehow Alvin Bragg find a way to make it work for him?
Yeah, as a lawyer with 60 years of experience, I'm as confused as the average person because there's no basis for the case here. There's a state misdemeanor that says that if you pay hush money the way Alexander Hamilton paid hush money back in the day, you have to report it on your corporate forms. And if you don't, if it's a misdemeanor. But if the reason you didn't report it on your corporate forms is to break another law, a federal law in this case, then it becomes a felony. Here's the problem. The federal government decided that there was no breach of federal law. They didn't prosecute. So the state decided to prosecute for a federal crime, essentially, that the feds didn't want to prosecute, over which they have absolutely no jurisdiction. So the federal law that they claim he was trying to evade is campaign laws, regulating money that can be spent. Now, if the purpose, the only purpose that he didn't disclose the hush money was to help his election, which is absurd. He had already been accused of all kinds of sexual shenanigans, obviously, the tape about if you touch people, et cetera. The reason he did it is he wanted to protect his wife, his family, his, you know, his business. That wouldn't be a federal crime. And so the government has to prove so many things that in a normal course of events they could never prove. And they have to do it through Cohen, who's probably the most unreliable witness in modern times.
Yeah.
So when you combine all those facts together, This is a case that no responsible prosecutor would ever have brought. In fact, Bragg decided not to bring it originally, and then his radical, hard-left, anti-Trump people in the office had a little revolt, and they said, oh, you better bring this case. You promised to get Trump, even though it's a weak case. Bring this case. And so on entirely political election interference grounds, he decides to bring this case. And we have a right to know that and to make sure that people like Bragg are never elected as district attorneys again, but he's trying to hide it by preventing it from being on television.
Alan Dershowitz making some great points. President Trump will be in court this morning. Now, he's going to get convicted because there's no way in a million years with jury selection beginning today, he'll get a fair trial in New York. The judge is already in the bag, this Mershon clown. So he's not going to get a fair trial. He's going to get convicted. Now, what we hear is the penalty could be anything from, obviously, probation to a four-year stay in jail. Me personally, again, just a layman, not an attorney, I don't see Trump spending one day in jail. What will happen is now Joe Biden will have a bullet in his gun when he debates Trump, when he's talking about Trump. He can say, ha ha, he's a convicted felon, which is not a good thing. That's a bad thing, but that's about as bad as I see it getting for President Trump. What about you?
No, I agree with that, and that's the purpose. You know, the judge may become a wise guy, and in order to become famous in history, he may say, look, I'm going to give you 30 days in prison or a week in prison or a day in prison just so that he can say, I put Donald Trump in prison. I don't think he's going to do that. I think the purpose of this thing is to influence the election. And the polls do show that a lot of independent voters say if he's convicted of a felony, they have no idea that this is a fake felony. It's a made up crime. If he's convicted of a felony, that might influence my decision to vote for him, whether it would or not. Come November, we don't really know. And this is probably, not certainly, but probably the only trial that will come to a verdict before the election. The other three cases are likely not to come to an election because of the shenanigans going on in Fulton County and because of the legal issues in the other cases. So this may be the only case. It's the weakest case. You know, the folks who wanted to really get Trump did not want this case to come first. They wanted it to come last because they knew it was the weakest case. But the calendar situation resulted in this being the first case. Look, we could all be surprised, too. And you could get a bunch of decent jurors who will acquit him or at least have a hung jury. That's not beyond the realm of possibility, even in New York. That will depend on today. That will depend on what kind of questions the judge allows the defense attorney to ask the jurors and whether he allows follow-up. So, for example, there's a dumb question on the questionnaire. Basically, do you have such strong, terrible views of Trump that it will affect your ability to grant a fair trial? Everybody's going to say no to that. Then you can have a follow-up question,
right,
and you can find out precisely what you have said about Trump in the past. To friends, people will lie about that as well. But it's harder to lie about things you did than do you have the ability to render a fair trial. Everybody will say, of course they do, even if they hate Donald Trump.
Does the prosecution and defense have the opportunity to interview these potential jurors?
Yes. It's supposed to be an equal opportunity, and they can also engage in what's called peremptory challenges, that is, challenges without any reason. But they can't do it on racial or gender or religious grounds. They have to do it on kind of legal grounds or, you know, moral grounds or factual grounds. But they, in theory, have an equal opportunity to question whether the judge treats them equally. That's the hard question. We'll see. Well, we won't see. That's the point.
We won't see it.
We'll have to trust the New York Times and CNN to tell us how fair this was. If you listen to other channels, maybe you'll get a better sense of what actually is going on in the courtroom. But why are we being deprived of that right? We can see our Congress in action. More and more we hear the Supreme Court arguments. Why can't we get inside this courtroom?
Great question. I got to tell you, that's the question of the day, and that's why Alan Dershowitz is so great and such an amazing attorney. You got about 2.5 minutes to go. We all saw what happened on Saturday night in Israel. You're not going to like this, but I think Joe Biden and America was part of the coordination. I think they knew it. They knew what was going on. And thank God, because they knew about everything, they shot about 99% of these things out of the sky.
I think you're right, by the way.
Oh, you do? Okay,
right.
Good.
I think there was coordination. And I think right now this is a perfect opportunity. As a matter of law, Israel has the right to go in and destroy the nuclear program in Iran. They have the right to try to bring about regime change. And unless and until regime change is brought about in Iran, this is going to happen again and again and again. It's coming to a theater near you. The only way to make peace in the Middle East, and let me tell you, if Israel, with the help of the United States, but even if they did it alone, if Israel were to bring about regime change, 70% of the Iranians would favor it. All of the Arab nations, the surrounding nations, the Sunni nations would support it. It would be great for peace in the Middle East. But I don't think the Biden administration has the guts to go in and do what it has to do, and that is bring about regime change in Iran. I had dinner the other night with the Shah's son, the crown prince, and he tells me, and he knows, that more than 70% of the Iranians would like to see this regime overthrown. So there's no case for maintaining the status quo when the status quo is exportation of terrorism around the world. We can stop that. You know, we failed in 1934 and 35. Britain and France could have destroyed the Nazi regime. Even Goebbels said that in his memoir. But we failed to do it. 50 million people died as a result. This is the moment to go in there and destroy this regime and destroy its nuclear capacity. If we miss this moment, there will be grave responsibility on whoever could have made the decision to go in and destroy Iran. And we should do it. And I hope we will, but I don't think we will.
Agreed. We should go into Iran and we should go into Rafah tomorrow and take out the rest of Hamas. But the president,
we wouldn't even have to worry about Rafah.
Right. But the president,
I
got it. But it took the president, Alan, 5 minutes, not 5 hours, not 5 days to tell Bibi, you did good. You got to win. You're done. We're not going to back you if you do go into Iran.
And to leak what he said to the press to put pressure on Bibi and the war cabinet, which is meeting right now. I hope the war cabinet has the ability and the power to disregard Biden on this one and to go in and do what has to be done.
Me too.
Without the help of the United States, it will be difficult because Iran has buried its nuclear facilities 80 meters in the ground, and it needs bunker-busting bombs. And the United States, by the way, under the Trump administration and the Biden administration, they have refused to provide Israel with the bunker-busting bombs. So if you know Donald Trump, tell him, if he becomes president, bunker-busting bombs for Israel to allow them to destroy the underground nuclear facilities. That's an area that the United States, both administrations, have failed on.
Agreed. I will tell him that. In the final 60 seconds, your friend David Friedman is coming up next.
Oh, he's great. He's fantastic.
The best. He's coming on for a second time in about a month. But O.J. Simpson, there seems to be a battle now over to who gets his estate. Does that not automatically go to Fred Goldman?
It should. Look, Fred, I like Fred Goldman. He doesn't like me, but I like him. I like the Goldman family. I think they stood up for the memory of their horribly murdered son. I think they ought to get the money. I completely agree with you.
All right, there it is. What an amazing appearance. Alan, you just did Donald Trump's court trial today. You did Israel, and you did O.J. Simpson, all in a matter of about 15 minutes. That's why you're a genius, and I love you. Thank you so much.
You're the one who did it. You asked me all the right questions. It's easy to answer your question.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan. Really great job. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. That's my friend Alan Dershowitz. They don't come any better. They really don't. And I got to tell you, that's quite a 1-2 punch going from Alan Dershowitz to former Trump ambassador to Israel. David Friedman.
Now you're taking messages from people to tell Trump.
Yes.
I'd heard that right?
I've gotten to that point, yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure. You know Trump, so tell him about this.
Alan knows. Me and Trump are tight. I want him to call me today. We'll take a short break. Don't forget, folks, today is also Patriot Day in Boston. They're going to run the Boston Marathon today. They're saying that terrorist levels at an all-time high. I believe it's been 6 years since they bombed the Boston Marathon. They're saying the level today is at a color they've never seen before. Red Sox have an afternoon game as well. Patriot Day in Boston. But we'll talk to David Friedman right here in New York when I get back right after this.
77 WABC.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
No, I get by with a little help from my friends.
Welcome to the camp. I guess you all know why.
It's been a great show already. It really has. We spoke to Alex Treyman, JNS.org, bright and early this morning, live in Israel. Curtis Sliwa, terrific. Alan Dershowitz, amazing. Still to come, Steve Bannon, that's my guy, War Room, Donald Trump. Dov Hyken, who I gave a big award to last night, him and his lovely wife, Shani, well-deserved. And then we'll talk to Mike Lawler, House GOP up there in Rockland County. But I'm really excited about this guest. He's making his second appearance on Sid and Friends in the Morning. And, man, I loved this guy when he was Donald Trump's ambassador to Israel. And he was out with me for the first time about a month ago, and it got back to me from people in Israel that he really enjoyed it. In fact, he brought me up unprovoked during a conversation about media personalities in New York, and I was really humbled. So here he is, my friend David Friedman. David, good morning, buddy. How are you?
Good morning, Sid. How are you? Great to be with you again.
Great to have you back on this day. And before we get into what happened Saturday in Israel, you were the ambassador under Trump. Trump is in a courtroom about 15 minutes away from me coming up later on this morning for the most ludicrous, embarrassing case in the history of law. That doesn't mean he's not going to get convicted here in New York, but we all agree it's an absolute joke. But how sad is it that your former boss and friend has to be in a court now 4 days a week for possibly 8 weeks?
Yeah, it's an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment to our judicial system. It's an embarrassment to our country. He's being prosecuted for something that nobody in history has ever been prosecuted for. And obviously, if you aren't running for president, and if you weren't winning, you know, in the polls, this prosecution wouldn't be going on. But, yeah, this is the worst thing you can do, is to use the judicial system to prosecute your political opponents. This is what Stalin used to do in Russia. You know, it's what dictators do. It's terrible. And it's a real shame on our country. And it's a shame on New York City, which I used to love.
You used to love. It's funny because I live in Queens, but Danielle and I lived in New York City down by Wall Street. We lived in Chelsea. Most recently, we lived on the Upper West Side, which is a horrible place, by the way. Horrible, David.
Yeah.
And I work in the city. I'm on 49th Street and 3rd Avenue right now, and I love working in the city. I enjoy the energy, but I can't wait to get out of here. And it's for a variety of reasons. First of all, it's dirty. It's filthy. It's gross. It's too much crime. I hate the politicians. I've got my reasons. What are yours?
Yeah, like I said, I worked in Manhattan for 35 years. I went into the city every day from Long Island. I still like Long Island, by the way. I still like Queens. But you know, it's just, to me, it's unlivable. It's too crowded. The traffic's brutal. The roads are in terrible shape. The crime is crazy. The fact that, you know, to get a bottle of Advil, you have to go speak to, you know, some of the pharmacy guy to unlock the thing so you can get a bottle of Advil or a bottle of, Tylenol, because everybody just steals from these things. It's terrible. I mean, it's becoming unlivable, and I don't live there anymore. I moved to Florida like a million other people.
You did move to Florida, and you're in South Florida, obviously. You love it down there.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a Trump guy, obviously, but you'd have to admit that Ron DeSantis, while not a very good presidential candidate, in fact, he sucked, to be honest, he is a pretty good governor, yes?
Yeah, it's a great place to live. I mean, it doesn't have the energy of New York City. I agree with you. And, you know, I miss that part of New York City, but it's outweighed by the fact that, you know, you can go wherever you want to go. The roads are fine. The there's not a lot of crime there. The weather's great. There's, you know, you're not standing online for everything you want to do. It's just an easier place to live. And, like, you know, I do miss New York City. It's a one of a kind place to live, and I loved it, but I don't love it anymore.
You're actually in New York right now. You're in a car as we speak. So
yes.
So you're telling me, David, that wherever you live down there in South Florida, that you haven't seen 5 or 10,000 people amass like we get here in Bay Ridge and other spots in Teaneck, New Jersey. You haven't seen 5,000 pro-Palestinians march down the golf courses of Boca Raton. You haven't seen that?
they don't want to go on the golf course. It's a Boca Raton. They wouldn't last 10 minutes. That's an act of war to walk on the greens of Boca Raton. Are you kidding? that's worse than what Iran did to Israel, walking on the greens of Boca Raton. Are you kidding me?
You're right. No, you say it's worse than what Iran did to Israel. And I spoke to you very early yesterday morning, and I put up a video even 2 hours before you and I spoke. And I said to you, at the risk of you saying, Sid, you sound crazy. I said to you, I believe the Americans were in on this all the whole way. I believe Biden spoke to Iran. He spoke to Turkey. He said, listen, they killed your guy. You got to save face. I get it. Send the drones, send the missiles. We'll shoot them out of the sky. Give us ample warning to do it. And then everybody will be fine. There'll be no more chaos. There'll be no World War III. So I really believe that while the Israeli citizens were scared to death, running to bomb shelters and watching things explode in the sky, that this son of a bitch, Joe Biden, was behind the whole thing. How about that?
Well, you know what? You know, we talked about it yesterday, and I was kind of skeptical. But as the stories are coming out, you know, about Biden's conversation with Turkey, using Turkey as an intermediary to negotiate with Iran. Yeah, I mean, there's some truth to it. Look, if this ends up being true, this will be an absolute outrage and a scandal the likes of which I haven't seen before. The fact that America is negotiating for Iran's attack on Israel, 300 missiles, ballistic cruise missiles, UAVs. I mean, look, it's great that Israel was able to intercept all of them. But you know what? Easily, some of these things could have gotten through. And some of these things are huge, huge missiles. And the idea that America is somehow negotiating Israel is unthinkable. And by the way, you know, I was thinking about it after we spoke. And you know, one of the reasons why I think Biden would do this is because, you know, 2 years ago, they gave up their entire strategic oil reserve. Now, America has this massive oil reserve for emergencies. And Biden said, you know, it's an emergency because we might lose the midterm election. So that was his emergency. And gas was very expensive. And so, you know, he released oil. We don't have any left. We have nothing left in the reserves. And so the idea that somehow there could be a war with Iran and oil could go up in price and Biden can't do anything about it, to him, that's how he loses the election. You know, another couple of dollars in the price of oil, and Biden's finished. And I think this guy is that calculating and that political relative to, you know, being principled, that he might actually do that. So, you know, we need to see this more in more detail, but you could be right. And if that's the case, wow, what an embarrassment for our country that we're not only are we not standing with Israel, but we're negotiating with Israel's enemy with regard to the size and shape of the attack.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what happened. Hey, tell me this, David, because I get a lot of flack from liberal Jewish people. Even on Long Island, Inwood, just last night, a couple of people were horrified when they spoke to me. Because I'm trying to figure out, even dating back to his days when he had to deal with Menachem Begin, when exactly was Joe Biden pro-Israel? I mean, the guy was Obama's VP when they did a deal with Iran. He wins the presidency. It takes him 3 days to get John Kerry back in his office to do the Iran deal again. And let me remind folks, after October 7th, second week of November, Joe Biden allows $10 billion in those frozen reserves to go back to Iran. Can you explain to me exactly when Joe Biden was pro-Israel?
You'd have to, you know, I can't think of a time. I mean, he will occasionally say something that sounds good. But look, the guy has given $26 billion in sanctions relief to Iran just in the last 6 months, $26 billion. He has he appointed as one of his, you know, one of his aides, Robert Malley, you know, who has since been fired. They won't tell you why. Apparently, he lost his security clearance. Apparently, he was working for the other side. But nobody will tell you. Like, the Congress has been trying to figure out for a while, but they won't tell you why. He's got some people working for him, which are absolutely the worst. I mean, you know, Kerry's terrible, and Wendy Sherman was terrible. She's now since gone. But a whole bunch of other people, the worst people, the most anti-Israel people that any administration has had, worse than Obama, now work for Biden. And so, he may talk, you know, again, with him, everything is political. He'll go to an event, and if he thinks he's got a pro-Israel crowd, he may offer a few platitudes about Israel. But the actions of this guy have never been pro-Israel, never.
Thank you. This is the great ambassador to Israel under Donald Trump, and a wonderful man. I mean that David Friedman. Today, what does PB do next? I mean, clearly, Joe Biden, I believe, did what he did through Turkey with Iran to avoid any more conflict because he plays on both teams. And it took him all of 5 minutes to say to PB, hey, if you do something else, we're not with you. So what does PB do next? You've got Rafa still sitting there with terrorists and hostages. You've got Iran sitting there after sending 300 missiles into your neighborhoods on Saturday night. What does PB do next?
Well, look, as far as Rafa goes, he's got a, you know, this is all one war. I mean, I think people kind of get this confused. This is all one war. The guy that was killed, the Iranian that was killed, that they say started this thing, was actually in Syria. He had no business being in Syria. And he was in Syria as the architect of the Hamas attack against Israel. That's the Iranian who was killed. So when people say, you know, well, Israel, you know, had it coming because they killed an Iranian. No, no. Israel was attacked by Hamas, and this Iranian was part of that attack. So, look, he's got to finish off this war. He's got to go into Rafah. He's got to clean out Hamas. That's the minimum. And Israel can do that on its own. Israel doesn't need anybody's help. Now, the question is, you know, and then they got to, you know, obviously, have enough deterrence to push Hezbollah back off the border so that the people, the 60, 80,000 Israelis who are off the border right now can go back to their homes, which is a huge issue. When it comes to Iran, look, I think they got to be clever. I think they got to be smart. They got to be strategic. And I'll tell you why, because I think Biden is really sticking it to Israel right now. I mean, Israel, they need spare parts for their planes. They need ammo. They need money. They need a bunch of things. And you know, Biden's got them over a barrel right now because of this war. So I think the question that, you know, Bibi's got to finish Hamas, and then he's got to tap dance, you know, around Biden, you know, until January 20th of 2025 and hope that we got a new administration. Nice. That's got to be the strategy. That's got to be the strategy right now.
That's terrible. That's a long wait. I mean, I'm not saying go drop a bomb in Tehran. I mean, I believe that a lot of the Iranian people actually would like to get rid of this regime. I know how they are. They love the West. I mean, I'm going to use a very silly example, but watching that show Shahs of Sunset on the Bravo channel, those are all Persian people who moved to Los Angeles and said, my relatives love what the United States does. And I believe the majority of Iranian people feel that way. I'm not saying bomb the people, but at the very least, can we not bomb the oil fields? Can we not bomb their nuclear plants? Those types of systematic tactical attacks?
I think Bibi would do that in a second if he knew he had I just think he needs the weaponry and the ammo. I mean, I don't know where Israel is right now. I mean, they've been in a war now for 6 months, and it's a multi-front war, and it just cost them $1.5 billion one night. One Saturday night cost them $1.5 billion in defending against those 300 missiles. So I don't know where he is. I suspect that America is leveraging Israel terribly right now not to do these things. And I think Bibi's got the constitution. You know he's built to handle these types of issues. Whether he has the weapons that he needs at his disposal, I don't know. And I'm really worried about what Biden's doing to him behind closed doors. It looks like these private conversations are brutal.
I agree. So in the final 60 seconds, our friend Trump gets to all these ridiculous trials. Maybe he gets convicted. I don't know. But he ain't going to jail for an extended period of time. So he's going to be the president of the United States. So Trump takes over January of 2025. My friend David Friedman, once again, regains his post as the ambassador to Israel. And how quickly can you and Donald Trump fix what's been broken by Biden in the Middle East?
Not more than a week. Not more than a week.
Really?
Maybe less. Maybe
really?
Less. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah,
what will you do? I believe you. I love you. But what will you do to make that true?
You impose massive sanctions on Iran on the first day. I mean, the first day you impose massive sanctions. You bring them to financial ruin. You let the world know that you stand with Israel and that anybody who attacks Israel has to not that American troops will defend Israel, because Israel's never asked for that and we don't need to do that. But you need to send out the message that anyone attacks Israel, the United States will place no limitations whatsoever, no handcuffs on Israel's self-defense, and will provide Israel with whatever resources they need. Those two things, the sanctions and that messaging, and I think the whole world's a different place.
David Friedman, I can only hope and pray that you have that opportunity. You and my friend Trump, I think you will, and I hope that's going to be the case. Thank you for another amazing conversation. I'm really honored that you come on this program and say such nice things to me. So thank you so much. Have a great day, and I look forward to talking to you again very, very soon, Dave.
You're the best. Thanks, Ed.
Oh, my God. Thank you. That's a big deal. You got to cut that up. David Friedman just said, I'm the best. You got to add that to the collage with Trump and Mark Levin and everybody else.
Hey, could you tell Trump something from me?
He didn't say that. Not David Friedman. But God, I hope we win and get this guy back. What a tremendous guy. The former ambassador to Donald Trump, to Israel, for Donald Trump, I should say, David Friedman. We'll take a short break. A lot more to do, folks. Four amazing guests in. We got three more to go, including Mr. War Room Steve Bannon. He's coming up shortly.
This is a blast. Hey, I'm a bold Mr. Normal. Don't try to gain my trust. Cause you ain't gonna follow me any of those waves, although you think you must. Take it, gonna break it, gonna shake it, let's forget it, better still.
Entertaining and informative.
This is Sit and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
All right, folks, it's been a busy show. Alex Trayman, Curtis Sliwa, Alan Dershowitz, David Friedman, Steve Bannon, Dove Hikins, and Mike Lawler are still to come, but I got to get this in. You know, last Wednesday, I had the opportunity to speak to Stephanie Diller. Short phone call, the wife of slain police officer Jonathan Diller. It was a lovely conversation. She's a beautiful young lady, and my heart breaks for her. And that only happened because of the head of the DEA, Paul DiGiacomo, who's become family at this point. He's not a friend of me and Daniele's family. He got us on a three-way, and we spoke, and, you know, we keep trying to get one of these Diller family members on, and as we're trying to do that, unfortunately, folks, here we go again. Two more officers, you heard Noam talk about it earlier, murdered in the northern part of the state last night, I believe. Here is Paul DiGiacomo with the latest. Paul, thank you again for the Diller attempt, but while we're trying to secure that, here we go again.
Yes, we have one Syracuse police officer that was shot and killed, and one sheriff that was shot and killed, and it seems like it's open season on cops, and I think Albany and our governor need to wake up and re-examine these bail reform laws, and I'm sure we'll take part and did take part in every one of these cop homicides.
I got to tell you, Paul, this scumbag, Carl Hasty, and if that sounds rough, it's not nearly rough enough. He came out last week and said, it doesn't matter. The stats don't show me that even with some of these horrible crimes, that fixing bail reform is going to help. That's what he keeps saying. See, and
well, first of all, that word is too kind for him. we've been trying to tell him that for years now. And there was a shooting in front of his office, and he did nothing about it. And it's not just about the numbers reflecting that. It's the tone and the mood and empowering the criminal element. That's what they're doing, because the criminal element knows there's no consequences, and they're just doing what they want, when they want, and how they want.
And you do this. This is your job, Paul. I mean, Stephanie loses her husband, and you step right in, right? And you help her in many respects, whether I guess it's financially or psychologically. This is what you do. I mean, I remember going to a Christmas party with Danielle a couple of months ago down by Battery Park and meeting other officers' families who were murdered in the line of duty. It's not easy work that you do every day, but you do it. So you see what happens to these people. It's absolutely heartbreaking.
It really is. It devastates their whole lives, their whole family life. It's something that takes years and years to get some sort of balance back. And, you know, and the criminals just keep going around carrying the guns and shooting people and robbing people and punching people. And Albany sits back and does nothing about it. And, you know, it's coming to a head. Something has to be done. Cops can't keep losing their lives. Children of cops can't keep going on without their fathers and mothers. And Governor Hochul and that Senate and the Assembly need to wake up and wake up fast.
So on the way out, Paul DiGiacomo, and as always, thank you for letting me know when these things happen. I really appreciate that. I do. What are the names of these heroes, these fallen officers, once again?
I don't know if they were released yet, to be honest with
you. Okay, we don't know yet. Okay. Well, listen, I like I said, you keep doing what you're doing. We're very lucky to have you. The governor's no good, and the rest of these politicians are losers. But we're very lucky to have you running the DEA, Paul DiGiacomo. So thank you very, very much for the difficult job that you do every day. Thank you for the Dilla discussion last week, and keep on plugging away. I know it's not easy, Paul. Thank you so much.
Will do. Thank you for your friendship. Greatly appreciate it.
Me too. I appreciate your friendship too. You're a great man. That's Paul DiGiacomo, the head of the DEA. Again, two officers gunned down, murdered in Syracuse last night. It's not Far Rockaway. It's not Long Island. It's not Brooklyn. But it ain't that far away. It continues to be a horrible issue in the state of New York. All right, we're going to talk to Steve Bannon here coming up momentarily.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
High-town newsstand, shut up the views, the common man, love train, rides from coast to coast, DJ's the man we love the most. Could you be speaking clean, smashing the hope of democracy, is the headline, says you're free to choose. Is it gonna be some money shoes? I wanna do things.
Tears for Fears, 8:50 on your beautiful Monday morning here in New York. What a unbelievable show already. Alex Drayman, Curtis Sliwa, Alan Dershowitz, David Friedman, and Paul DiGiacomo. Still to come, Dove Hyken and Mike Lawler. But my next guest, he's got the best podcast in the world. Not just the country, the world. It's the best. I want to hear about Jim Rogan. What's his name? Joe Rogan? He's an idiot. Any of these guys, Carolla, they don't compare to Steve Bannon's War Room. That's the real deal. In fact, I think Bannon did a special called Coup de Grace with our good friend, his friend longer than mine, Donald Trump, right here, not that far from me this morning in New York City in a courtroom. So here he is, the great Steve Bannon. Steve, good morning, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Sid. Very tough day for news, but doing fine.
It is a tough day for news. You and I spoke quite a bit about Israel and Iran. I told you that I thought that Joe Biden was in on it. And now I've got people like David Friedman, who I know you love and respect as much as anybody, saying, Sid, I think you were right when I said that craziness Saturday night into Sunday morning. But let's start with Trump. He's in court this morning. You did a special War Room podcast over the weekend about it. And to you, this is much more than just a former president in court. This speaks to a much bigger deal, doesn't it?
No, this is law firm. On Saturday, we had coup d'etat. We did Kennedy. We then had Richard Nixon, particularly Nixon being removed from office by the federal judiciary, the DOJ, and the congressional staffs, the way they really removed him. And then we finished with President Trump, Mike Davis, who most people know today as one of the top lawyers out there defending President Trump. He's going to be in Lower Manhattan for us with Laura Loomer when we start our broadcast today. But no, this is an absolute disgrace. This would have never happened. Cy Vance Jr., all the haters in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, including the guy they assigned to this, all dropped it. The guy wrote a book. There's nothing here. This is all to smear Trump. Matthew Colangelo from the Eric Holder Justice Department that is in Merrick Garland's Justice Department was seconded to Manhattan over a year and a half ago, to basically hardwire this into the Department of Justice to bring these phony charges. And so this is just all this is to get story, you know, a porn star, a Playboy bunny, the Billy Bush stuff, and try to smear President Trump because he's leading demonstrably in all the polls. And so this is lawfare. This is going to be very tough. The MAGA movement is going to have to put their shoulder to the wheel to make sure we get the real narrative out there, Sid, because the mainstream media, already they had on Morning Mika this morning, they had one historian after the other saying that Trump's a tyrant. If Trump is reelected, it will destroy America. So this is already going to play for the highest stakes possible, and people are going to have to really get focused and push out the narrative President Trump is going to present every afternoon, I think at 5 o'clock from 40 Wall Street when he walks to the sticks to give his summary of the day.
That's right, 40 Wall Street, 5 o'clock every day. He'll be in court. This is what his guy told me, Jason Miller, last Monday. He'll be in court Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. He's got off on Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday to campaign and maybe play golf, hopefully. But look, we know what happened with the E. Jean Carroll case. I know that Donald Trump wanted it all to go away, but in all fairness, it wasn't going to happen here in New York. And at the very least, my dear friend Joe Tacopina had the rape removed from that. You can't call Donald Trump a rapist, but you may very well be able to call Donald Trump a convicted felon when this case is done. We know it's nonsense. We know there's no legal merit. We know it's embarrassing, all those things. But Joe Biden may have that piece of ammunition to call him a convicted felon. That doesn't scare you even a little?
It doesn't scare me when you really look at the polling. What I think they're going to try to do is take 2 months to basically just smear President Trump every day in a court to try to drive off. If you and I have talked about more of these college-educated suburban women, I think this is all a smear campaign. That's what I think President Trump has to get his side out. And I think we have to go more on offense on Joe Biden and his family, the crime family, and other things associated with the Biden regime, which we will do. I think the best counter, I've always believed that the best defense is an offense, and war room intends to go on offense. That's the reason we have Mike Davis and Laura Loomer.
No, listen, and listen, Mike Davis is great. Laura Loomer is great. Steve Bannon is great. Sid Rosenberg is great. A handful of hosts at Fox News are great. But the truth is, we are outnumbered. I don't care how strong you and I are, and we're strong. We are tough bastards. We are so outnumbered. How do we make sure that enough people hear the truth?
I think it's incumbent. I think these afternoon when President Trump goes to the sticks, I think it's incumbent to us to force that out into the mainstream. Mainstream media is not going to want to cover it. I just think we have to force it. Look, it's not going to be easy. This is the most rigged thing. This is more rigged than the stolen election. What they're doing against President Trump, and people have to understand, this is hardwired to the Justice Department, to Merrick Garland, and therefore hardwired to the White House. Joe Biden understands he's got one shot to take down Trump, and that's his lawfare. And you're right, they want to call him a convicted felon, but more, they want the 8 weeks. Look, today they start jury selection. I think they're going to bring in 1,500 people over the next day or two, potentially. They've got 8,000 potential jurors. And as you know, Sid, in Manhattan, it's quite tough to get one MAGA person who would be open-minded, just somebody to be fair, be open-minded and listen to this on this jury. The jury selection, I think, is critically important. I think it could be 80 or 90% of the game here. So, what happens over the next 2 weeks in jury selection is going to be quite important. We'll make sure we report. Look, this is not going to be easy. The Biden regime knows it's not going to be easy. That's why they've got a couple. They've got Fonnie Willis. They've got Jack Smith. They got the one in Florida. They are trying to tie President Trump down. You just walk through the schedule. He's essentially got Wednesdays to campaign.
Yep.
And maybe Saturday and Sunday.
Yep.
And they got this for 2 months in one of the most critical times for the general election. So they know what they're doing. These people are vicious. They control this country, and they're not prepared to give it up because Sid Rosenberg and Steve Bannon say, hey, you guys are bad guys, and we should have control. They're not going to do that. We have to take it from them in the polls, and then we have to make sure we close on the election this time. We actually close on our victory, and then we have to get back into power and hold these people accountable. Once you get into the records, once you get into all their receipts, you'll see what went on in this country. But we got to win. We have to win every day. And today's the kickoff to have to win this.
Agreed. And well said, Steve Bannon. I'm going to throw you on hold for a second. You said they know what they're doing. But what if I said to you that there are folks today, not even necessarily on our side, that say this may turn out to be great for Trump? Maybe they don't know what they're doing. More of Steve Bannon. Keep it right here.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
What you say, just a friend.
Oh, you're my best friend.
77 WABC.
My man Steve Bannon, that War Room podcast is as good as it gets. Best podcast in the country. So, you know, you said they know what they're doing, and they do, and they're vicious, and they're animals, and all those things. There's a lot of folks that think that President Trump started this unbelievable ascent when the conviction started. Now, I don't believe that. I've been over this before. I think it started in East Palestine. But either way, you can't argue the fact that all these ridiculous cases brought on have helped Trump. And there are some that think, believe it or not, with all the nastiness we're going to see the next 2 months, that in the end, this will help Trump, too. I'm not sure I buy that just yet, but that possibility does exist. Yes.
It definitely exists if we execute. Remember, this we've crossed the Rubicon this morning. Everything else to now has been filings, has been court filings, has been arguments by lawyers and pundits. This is where you actually get into a trial. I strongly believe that this will help President Trump if President Trump and his supporters are able to message this correctly and let people see what's really going on. If people truly understand what's going on here, I think it helps President Trump immeasurably. Right.
I think so, too. Yeah. Now, listen, you know him really, really well. And certainly in that first presidential run in 2016, you guys were together all the time and you guys have remained friends for many, many years. So all I keep hearing is he's going to go nuts. You know, he's got to sit in that courtroom 4 days a week. And he was even complaining yesterday about the gag order. He's like, I can't talk. I can't say anything. How bad is that going to be for our friend?
Well, the gag order is unconstitutional. I mean, you have Michael Cohen, these lawyers going on TV every night and hammering President Trump and trying to form the battlefield of this information war. I mean, CNN and MSNBC are relentless by putting people on who know the witnesses Cohen's on. They're doing podcasts on TV all the time. How can you gag President Trump from telling his side to the media? I think it's a totally unconstitutional gag order. I think that would be one of the big things in appeal. But all they care about is this November. I think President Trump, who is extremely disciplined, when focused, I think he's going to be very focused on this. I think we're going to see this to be a coming together of the MAGA movement and President Trump to hammer back and to pierce their wall of sound. Remember, this is all information warfare. This has nothing to do with really the rule of law or justice. This is all because they cannot defeat President Trump in a fair and free election, and they know that. So they're going to do everything to try to steal it again in November, and they're going to use lawfare to try to destroy President Trump right now in front of the American voters. And if we do our job and get that word out and make sure people can see how ridiculous this is, how obscene this is, I think it turns a number of voters towards President Trump. So I think this could be a big winner. But once again, today we crossed the Rubicon. It's a different, you know, just like Caesar, it's a big difference on the other side after you cross it and you get a march to Rome. We've got a very tough fight ahead of us. I think it's very winnable, but we got to be focused, disciplined, and tough.
Well, I know this. Steve Bannon and Sid Rosenberg are certainly ready and willing and capable of fighting. So, and it's not just the two of us. There's lots of us out there. So that's the good news for our friend who may be in the car right now on the way to court listening to you and I. He did tell me at the golf course just a couple of weeks ago. He listens to me every morning when he's in New York. So we'll see. But on the way out in the final 2 minutes, Steve, you and I spoke quite a bit over the weekend with the whole Iran-Israel conflict. I refuse to call it a major attack. I mean, yes, the weaponry was major, hundreds of missiles. But when you find out, like I said Sunday morning, that the United States was part of it, we knew before what was going to happen, as did Turkey, as did Jordan, all these countries. It does kind of take away the sting from what Iran wanted the world to believe was this major attack. And when you find out, like I said to David Friedman, he agreed that Joe Biden was kind of in on it. That is not acceptable. Your thoughts?
I think the ambassador is right. I think you were right when you put it up. We have to be very suspect. This thing was so telegraphed in what happened. I think that the Biden regime, they're going to try to force a ceasefire on Israel. And all I would say is finish the task at hand. You have to take out those Hamas battalions down in the south, the four in the south. You have to take the two out in Judea, Samaria. Just get on with it. I think this is another distraction. I think that obviously the Persians are the overall one of the biggest enemies Israel and the Judeo-Christian West, the United States, have. But I think this is I don't trust the Biden regime on any of this. It's very suspect. 72 hours notification, how it went down. All they want is a ceasefire. And a ceasefire, people should understand, means a defeat for Israel. Eventually, she'll be destroyed. There can't be a ceasefire. All the Democrats are yelling about it. Michael Moore's got a big thing that Biden has to get it or he's going to lose Michigan. That's the fight. This is over domestic American politics. If I was Israel, I wouldn't trust anything, anybody in the Biden administration, the Biden regime said. I would just get on with business.
I don't think they trust him. I think they just need him. They need the weaponry. They need the bullets. They need the money. I think Bibi can't stand Biden. He knows he's a liar, but they do need him. By the way, it is official. Moments ago, President Trump, literally seconds ago, did arrive at court. So our friend President Trump is in a courtroom as we speak. Steve Bannon, as always, not a good job, an amazing job. I love the fact you're on every Monday morning. It's a huge segment for my listeners, and I thank you very, very much. And we begin the fight, my friend, today. I'm right with you.
With our shields or on our shields, Sid.
All right, my man. Thank you so much. That's a great job. Steve Bannon right there. He's got the best podcast in the world. Trust me. Check out War Room with Steve Bannon. And that'll wrap up hour number three. Been an amazing show. Again, Alex Trayman, Curtis Sliwa, Alan Dershowitz, David Friedman, Paul DiGiacomo, Steve Bannon, still to come, Dove Hikind, and GOP Congressman Mike Lawler. Keep it right here. One more hour to go on this epic, historic Monday in New York City.
Sit in Friends in the Morning.
Entertaining and informative.
Oh, you're my best friend.
77 WABC.
This is not America. Sha-la-la-la-la.
Little piece of you. A little piece in me.
What a wonderful night I had last night. Thanks to the great Rabbi Heshy Blumstein, who invited me a couple of weeks ago for this Thanking Hashem night. Really thanking the shul that I went to months and months ago before my trip to Israel in Woodmere with the Hikin family and met Rabbi Blumstein. And they honored three wonderful people last night. Really more than three, it was five, but with two couples, Akiva and Sarah Portes. Shalom Jacobs, I love this guy. This guy was great. And my dear, dear friends who deserve every honor they get because they're fierce and beautiful Jewish people, Dove and Shani Hikin. And I made a little five-minute speech and gave them this well-deserved award. And a lot of friends there, too. Gene Stevens, grew up with Gene Stevens, his lovely wife Susan, and my dear friend David Oppman of so many years, who married my friend Alice Siegel many years ago. He actually just came just to say hello, and Judge Proust was there last night. I'm going to feel really badly if I leave out names here, because there were so many that were so kind and lovely last night. And it really was a wonderful time. But with that said, after what happened in Israel Saturday, and it does warm my heart that the ambassador to Israel for Trump, David Friedman, agrees with me. Steve Bannon agrees with me. When I first put that video up yesterday morning that I thought Joe Biden and our government was complicit in this attack, I thought people would go nuts, and some did. But when you get folks like Alan Dershowitz and David Friedman on this show this morning saying, Sid, I agree with you, makes me feel pretty good. Not good about our president or our government, but it makes me feel good that I can say something which 5 years ago would have been outlandish and have these brilliant men say, Sid, I think you're right. Anyway, Dov Hikind is a great voice for the Jewish people, a wonderful man and a dear friend. Dov, good morning, buddy. How are you?
Good morning, and thank you for being there. And while we were honored, you were really the star of last night, and that's the truth. I mean, people just, you know, I saw, you know, people were just all over you. Everyone wanted to take a selfie with you because they appreciate your heart and soul and who you are and what you've done nonstop for the Jewish people, for the people of Israel. But I want to make you feel good about something else right now this morning. It hasn't gotten much attention yet, but you will really appreciate it, and so will your audience. You know, people always say about the Jewish community, why do they continue to vote for the Democratic Party? And if ever they shouldn't, it should be this year, if ever. And here's a story. One of the most important Reform rabbis here in New York, Rabbi Amiel Hirsch of the Stephen Weiss Synagogue, just came out in a speech this weekend talking about being very critical of the Biden administration and said the following: our synagogue and American Jewry support Israel unconditionally, not uncritically. There never was a Jew who was an uncritical Jew, but we support Israel unconditionally. And they send a message, listen to this, telling the Democratic Party, be careful. The results of the upcoming election do not only depend on Michigan.
I love that. God, I love this rabbi. He's exactly right. And look, you know, the folks that love to hate Donald Trump, they love to hate him. That's fine. So Trump goes on Gorka's podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he repeats something I've been saying for 9 months. If you want to get mad at Donald Trump, you may as well get mad at me, because you've heard me say this, and that is that any Jew that votes for Biden, and quite frankly, any Democrat, and you were a Democrat your whole life, any Democrat is not just misled, they're a disgrace. And that's how I feel. You look at how this administration, how this president continues to stab Israel in the back every step of the way. You're going to find out I was exactly right about what happened this weekend with Iran. You look at all these Democrat politicians, Tlaib, Omar, AOC, even Schumer. They don't exist in the Republican Party. So I don't know what else Jewish people need to see to come to the realization that, yes, I've done this my whole life. I'm supposed to do this. But at some point, it's got to stop.
Absolutely. And Rabbi Hirsch went on to say about the Democratic Party, their perception that it had not only become increasingly hostile against Israel, but also tolerant of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism within its ranks. Now, this is, you know, it's one thing Dov Hikind, it's one thing Sid Rosenberg, but when you have a leader in the Reform movement here in the United States saying what I just said, to me, that is music, and I hope the message will be clear. Take a hike, take a vacation from the Democratic Party this year. Send a message, a powerful message. And Rabbi Hirsch, my God, I mean, this is a guy, I know his name my whole life. He's saying the Democratic Party has betrayed the Jewish people.
Well, they have. Where is Rabbi Hirsch out of? What? Where is he in New York?
He is the Stephen Weiss Synagogue in Manhattan.
Oh, Manhattan,
very
right.
Very prominent. Very,
yes.
Yeah, very prominent.
Yes. It's a big deal.
So this is really major to me, and I hope that continues. And what he says, by the way, in this interview in the Jerusalem Post, he says that he has been talking to Jews all over America, and this is a sentiment. And he's not talking to Jews like you and me. I mean, he's talking to other Jews, much more liberal. Okay, and he's saying the sentiment among the people that he's speaking to is that the Democratic Party is abandoning Israel, but not only that, that they are tolerant of anti-Semitism.
True. True. I mean, come on, Dov. How do you vote for these people? I mean, day in and day out. I gave it five names just now. I mean, you know, we got Pesach coming up a week from today, and I got to tell you, people are scared. It's not supposed to be that way. You're not supposed to have to worry that if you go out this week and go shopping for Pesach, that some animal is going to bash you over the back of your head. Or if you're in Israel, you shouldn't have to worry. I mean, look, Joe Biden went out of his way. Went out of his way to make sure, he told Bibi, he said, during Ramadan, you know, you take your foot off the gas during Ramadan. Has Joe Biden expressed that same anger towards Iran or Hamas with Pesach coming up? Absolutely not. Why is that okay?
Yeah, look, President Biden is responsible for the fact that the war in the Middle East is not over. It would have been over weeks and weeks and weeks ago. But the Biden administration, through the State Department, through the White House, you know, every moment, you know, I remember Biden used to say way back, he said, whenever I have a dispute with Israel, I'm going to do it quietly. You know, but that's not what has happened. He sends out his minions, whether it's in the Department of State, in the Defense Department, the White House, and they are undermining Israel. And I think one of the reasons Iran felt comfortable going after Israel is they see the dispute between the Biden administration and Netanyahu. All Biden has done is undermine the prime minister, the elected prime minister of the state of Israel. And the people of Israel, as you know, they may not all be for Netanyahu, but they all support his goals of eradicating Hamas. That they all agree with, that that needs to be done. But the Biden administration wants to make Netanyahu the boogeyman. He's the bad guy. If only Netanyahu wasn't there, there would be no problem. And that is an absolute lie.
I do want to end this conversation, which is always great and informative, going back to last night. And boy, this Rabbi Bloomstein, I love this guy. This guy's singing and dancing. You know, he did the same thing in the lobby in my hotel in Jerusalem every morning as we started our daily, you know, guides. Every morning he was just in this great mood. He was the same way last night. And I mentioned some of the folks that I saw last night, old friends like Gene Stevens. I'm afraid I left people out. If you want to include some of them right now, please do that. But just being there last night, I sent a text to Danielle Dove. You'll love this. And I said, you know, with Dove and Shani right now, and I said, man, I really love my people. Because anytime I go to any of these events, whether it's your house for Shabbos or Zeb Brenner, or whether it's your shul that Woodmere morning, whether it was the Kiddush that day or Rabbi Bloomstein's house, there's this immense feeling of pride and love and together. And last night on a Sunday night, it was so clear that no matter what they try to do to us, they being a world of Jew haters, we are stronger now than ever. I really believe that.
Well, Sid, Rabbi Bloomstein symbolizes the best of the Jewish people, and that is love, one person for another, not being judgmental, not looking at the differences, but looking at the beauty of the Jewish people. And like you said, you know, he was on fire last night. I mean, this man was so full of love and passion and compassion. And you got it right. I mean, you know, people out in the five towns, you know, come to our synagogue on Broadway. It is an experience. We have a rabbi that is just totally, totally amazing. And Sid, as you know, it's the people. It's all about the people at the end of the day. And you met those beautiful people last night. They hugged and kissed you, and they couldn't get enough of you, basically, okay? And it's all because for one reason, no great secret, because they feel your heart, you feel their heart, and you're on the same page. You care about the same things, and that is the well-being of our great country. We love America, and we love We love the state of Israel. We love the people of Israel. And we are one. All of us. All of us. I don't care who you are. I don't care what differences we have. We are one people. That's the story.
Well said. And what a deserved award last night for you and your beautiful wife, Shani. I was honored to do it. I hope I do a lot more, thousands more, Dove Hyken, before it's all said and done. So thank you so much for having me there last night. Congratulations again on the wonderful award. And I will see you very soon. And you know what? October 7th, the one-year commemoration, we will be in Jerusalem together. I promise you that.
Absolutely. Sid, God bless you, your family, all of you listeners. You are the absolute superstar of America.
I love you, too. Thank you, though. That's very sweet. Thank you. That's my dear friend, the great assemblyman for the better part of four decades in Borough Park, Brooklyn, and now just a fierce, important voice for the Jewish community, the great, and I mean the great, Dov Hykin. We'll take a short break. When we get back, Mike Lawler, House Congress GOP. He is pissed about a variety of things. What are they? You're about to find out.
Falcons battles to the ground.
The biggest
so cut it red tomorrow's clouds. A little piece of you, a little piece in me.
Oi! This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
Friends, how many of us have them? Friends.
77 WABC.
About 9:35 on your gorgeous Monday morning, and it is gorgeous.
Used to spend my night.
Well, not for my friend Trump. He's inside a courtroom right now. This is a great song, by the way, Louie.
It's his birthday today.
It is?
Yeah. I didn't figure it out. 1978, mathematician.
46.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
I have no idea if you're right, but that could
be. No, I'm right.
But
you rescued me. It's my birthday week this week. My birthday is coming up on Friday, of course, but...
Oh, Chris Stapleton wanted to get a message to Trump if you wanted to.
Yeah. I seem to be that guy today. All my guests are telling me, well, when you talk to Trump, I don't know if Chris Stapleton wants me to do that. Maybe Mike Lawler does. I don't know. Lawler is a member of the House, GOP member. We like him a lot up there in Rockland County. There's a lot I need to get to in 10 minutes, Mike, so I'm going to blow by a whole bunch of stuff. I know you want to start with Biden. We saw, of course, what happened with the United States, with Iran and Israel on Saturday. I have maintained for days, and a lot of smart people agree with me now, that Biden knew about it, helped plan it, coordinate it, whether it was through Turkey or not, I don't know. But him beating himself on the chest and acting as a savior is ridiculous because he knew exactly when and where those missiles and drones were going to be fired. And he also knew that once he did that and kind of put the fire out, he can stop Israel from an aggressive reaction, which is more nonsense. Your thoughts?
Well, Sid, you know, what we've seen under Joe Biden is weakness. And starting with the disastrous withdrawal in Afghanistan, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the terrorist attack on Israel, the threats emanating in the Indo-Pacific from China, at every turn, he has failed to show strength. And what he and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats have done over the last few weeks was undermine Israel and undermine its ability to defend itself and create an opening, frankly, for Iran to strike. And the fact is that Iran is the greatest state sponsor of terror. They have funded Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and other terrorist organizations as their proxies in this effort to eradicate the state of Israel. And they finally took the opportunity to directly strike at Israel. And we need to show strength and resolve in this moment. We cannot be a bunch of Neville Chamberlains. We must be Winston Churchill. Victory at all costs. This is the most precarious time since World War II around the globe. And what we get from Joe Biden is a bunch of mealy-mouthed nonsense.
Yep.
Telling Netanyahu, you know, be careful. Don't retaliate. I mean, give me a break. The world is on fire.
Yep.
And we are the leader of the free world. And Joe Biden has shown zero leadership. It's why Bob Gates said years ago that Joe Biden has been involved in nearly every foreign policy decision for decades. And every time he has been wrong.
Yeah, and Barack Obama also said about his own vice president, don't underestimate the ability for Joe Biden to F things up. But he actually used the curse word. That asshole Chuck Schumer is out there today trying to get some Appropriations Act done for Israel so they can rearm. Yes, the same Chuck Schumer that buried Israel and Bibi Netanyahu on the Senate floor is out there now all of a sudden as if he cares. I know you care, Mike. Talk to me about the House. I believe it was you guys, maybe you, D'Esposito, a couple of months back, a couple of weeks back, looked to get a standalone Israel bill anywhere between $14 and $18 billion. Biden would never do that. We know that. Then all the talk came about, well, we need money for the American border, not Ukraine. Mike Johnson's getting hammered every day by Marjorie Taylor Greene. But we're at that point again where Israel does need American help and American money. What will the House do next?
Look, this is the time for action. You know, we've had a lot of debate, a lot of discussion. I understand people's perspectives, but we are the leader of the free world. And if we don't lead, others will. And those others will be China, Russia, and Iran. And this is a very big problem for us and our allies around the globe, and especially Israel. They are in a tinderbox. You know, where are all the ceasefire now people today? Not a single one of these folks are calling for Iranian ceasefire. Not a single one of these folks are calling for Hamas to surrender. What Chuck Schumer, for Chuck Schumer to be out there now acting as though he's trying to be Israel's champion and defender, what he did a few weeks ago on the Senate floor, calling for regime change, interfering in an ally's election, was shameful. It was unbecoming of a leader of Congress, and really undermined the state of Israel and their ability to defend themselves. Not only do we have to get aid across the finish line, and by the way, House Republicans passed standalone aid to Israel back in November of last year. We passed that across the House floor, bipartisan support, and Chuck Schumer sat on it. And so, you know, we find ourselves obviously in a situation now where we got to get aid across the finish line. We have to negotiate. The Republicans control the House. The Democrats control the Senate. Joe Biden is in the White House. We got to get something done. But it goes beyond that, Sid. I introduced and passed the SHIP Act through the House last November, which would put secondary sanctions on the purchase of Iranian petroleum. The biggest purchaser of Iranian petroleum is China. $88 billion in increased revenue to Iran through the sale of Iranian petroleum since Joe Biden took office. $88 billion. So when people wonder where the money is coming from to fund Hamas, to fund Hezbollah, to fund the Houthis, to fund these missile and drone and weapons that are coming from all sides at this moment attacking Israel, it's coming from the illicit oil trade. And China is the biggest purchaser. Chuck Schumer has been sitting on this bill since last November. This bill needs to pass the Senate. It has overwhelming bipartisan support. There is no reason that this bill should not be taken up this week to implement secondary sanctions on China and others who are purchasing Iranian petroleum and funding the very terrorism that is striking at the heart of Israel.
Ah, yes. You just nailed it. You just nailed it. Something I've been talking about since Monday, October 9th, how Iran became enriched thanks to China and all that oil money. Nothing to do with the $60 billion that, yes, the United States wants to make available, or the $10 billion we did make available last November. That's heinous. That's, believe me, that's a crime. But, yes, they become rich because of China. Give me 30 seconds on this MTG trying to get rid of Mike Johnson. I like Marjorie. I'm not going to lie. I think she stands for a lot of very, very good things. I love her passion for Trump, but she's out of her mind with this one. I like Mike Johnson. How serious is that, or is that just Marjorie Taylor Greene looking for press?
Look, Marjorie and my colleagues who throughout this tenure have, you know, fought within, undermined the majority, they got to stop. They got to stop. The focus has to be on the issues at hand. Mike Johnson is doing a good job leading under a very difficult circumstances.
Agreed.
We have a very tight majority. There's not a lot of room for error here. We got to work as a team. There is too much at stake. The United States needs to lead, and the Republican Party, the party of Reagan, needs to show peace through strength. That requires us to lead. And as far as I'm concerned, Marjorie and anyone else who would entertain this just needs to stop and focus on the task at hand.
Well said. Give me this local story. The head, and you're Mr. Rockland County. I actually call you that, Mr. Rockland County. The head of the Rockland County Republican Party intends to re-show the inflammatory "A Storm Is Coming" video that was taken down last week after critics called it anti-Semitic for warning of a, quote, takeover by the Orthodox Jewish community. The Rockland GOP chairman, I know you know him, Lawrence Garvey, is, I guess, at the center of this. What is this all about?
Now, this is from 2019. This video goes back to then. I and many others called for it to be taken down then. It was, and that I don't know where that's coming from, but that video is most assuredly not being played anywhere. We're going back out. You know, obviously in Rockland County, we have a very diverse community here. I'm proud to represent it. I have one of the largest Orthodox and Hasidic Jewish communities here, of which I have a very strong relationship with. Representing everybody here. You know, we, like every community, there's challenges, there's tensions, but the focus has to be on how we move forward as a community, how we live amongst each other peacefully. And at the end of the day, no matter what your background is, we all want a few things in life. We want a good paying job for our families. We want a quality education for our kids. We want access to housing and healthcare, and we want to live in a safe neighborhood. That has got to be the focus for everyone. That's what I do as an elected official. I've sought to bring the temperature down in Rockland and other places throughout my district because, you know, whether you're talking about the Orthodox community, whether you're talking about the Hispanic community, the Irish community, we all have to live amongst each other and work together.
Not only is Lawler a great politician, but nobody gives a tour of the Capitol building like Lawler. You are. I mean, that was so impressive that night. Me and Danielle are still talking about it. My God, you knew everything about
that. It was a great night, and we were so happy to have you and Danielle there, and even more happy to have you in the chamber for the State of the Union and watch you get kicked out. We heard the voice, says who, and we all turned and looked, and we saw you, and then we watched you get escorted out, and then Anthony had to come, you know, check you out.
It was a very, very, it was a fun 2 days, I tell you. The dinner tour at the Capitol Grill was great. So keep doing the great job you're doing.
Sid, let me just tell you this. April 19th is a great day for two reasons. It's your birthday, and it's going to be my daughter's second birthday. So happy birthday to you, and happy birthday to my daughter, Juliana.
No kidding. She has the same birthday as me.
Yep.
She is destined to be great, and my mother, too. Hey, by the way, for folks who want to donate to you right now as you get set to run again, you're going to win, there's no question. But for folks who want to help you out, how do they do that, Mike?
They can go to LawlerForCongress.com, LawlerForCongress.com, or text Lawler to 85007.
Is that Lawler the number four or F-O-R?
F-O-R.
All right, Mike. Great job, buddy. Thank you for hopping on today. All right. God bless you. You got it. That's House Congressman Michael Lawler. Does a great job up there in Rockland County.
Entertaining and informative.
This is Sid and Friends in the Morning.
77 WABC.
So my man Curtis Sliwa loves my idea of naming and shaming these judges. You know why? Because I'm a badass Jew. I'm a badass mother effing Jew is what I am. And we need to name and shame these judges. So, Noam, I need you to confirm this through Jennifer Harrison, Victims Rights New York.
Right.
This comes from a guy named Gary Tilzer, True News. And he says, her name is it Lori Peterson?
That's the one from this guy from the Grand Central case.
That's correct.
Yeah.
The judge that freed the guy to punch a 9-year-old girl, she's the same judge that sentenced 76-year-old Alan Weiselberg to sit in a box at Rikers Island over a BS case. He's the guy that was the CFO for Trump.
Oh, Weisselberg, you mean?
That's right.
Yeah.
So it turns out, I guess, if you can confirm this, this judge allowed this animal out who had broken some lady's face a couple of weeks before to punch a 9-year-old, but she made sure the old Jew who worked for Trump is sitting in Rikers. Anybody okay with that? I mean, rational people, not these Democrat animals, not these idiots. Any rational person okay with that?
She's right, by the way. It is the same judge.
Same judge.
Yep.
Hey, Curtis, I hope you're listening right now. Same judge that put Weisselberg, a 76-year-old man, in Rikers, allowed this animal, who again had just broken somebody's face a couple of weeks ago, to get right out and punch a 9-year-old girl. Lori Peterson. Oh, what all these judges' names. So the great judge last night, Judge Pruse, great man. But these judges are every bit the problem, along with the repugnant district attorney, Alvin Bragg, this repulsive attorney general, Letitia James.
You're leaving out one big guy
you
here.
You are leaving out Carl Hastie?
No, well, no, even bigger than that. The guy who said gave the green light to this and didn't and tied the judge's
hands. Oh, you're talking about Andrew Cuomo?
I am. Yeah.
Sure. No, sure. And Kathy Hochul, who has continued to carry Cuomo's torch.
Yeah, and Cuomo laid down those bail laws and essentially tied these judges' hands so they can't do anything. And he could have made it so they could look at each case and say, okay, here.
This is what he claims. Again, he claims, and he said this to me, and I'm not sure if he said it on the air yet, because I haven't had him on, but he claims that when he originally was okay with bail reform, he was under the impression that the judges would have discretion, and that they basically screwed him, took the judge's discretion away. But he claims if he didn't have to leave office when he did, he was going to be able to have that judge discretion conversation. Now, when I bring that up, people like Jennifer Harrison go nuts, and Curtis, he's a liar, blah, blah, blah. But that is his contention.
And do you buy that?
Not really.
Yeah.
I don't buy anybody. I don't believe any of these politicians. I mean, some of them I like more than others personally. Some. But at this point, I don't believe any of them. I believe Trump. I mean, I can't believe I've become that guy, but I have. I've become that guy. He's the one. I believe him. I do. He doesn't say everything right all the time. You know, he tends to be a bull in a china shop every now and then. I get all that. But he has done an incredible job of exposing the truth. He has exposed all these people for the better part of 10 years. And I love him for that. I do. Above and beyond what he did as president, which is for 3.5 years, make sure we were prosperous and good. I love the other stuff that he does, which is stuff like this, exposing all these bastards that forever got away with whatever they wanted to get away with. I mean, somebody said to me over the weekend, Joe Biden has never made more than $300,000 or $400,000 and lives in a $9 million mansion. And Trump is the crook. Trump's made billions in real estate. He had a real job. Joe Biden has never had a real job, ever. And he's a multi-millionaire. Can you explain that to me? No?
I cannot.
God damn it, explain it!
I thought you were just sort of giving a general question.
I kind of was.
It wasn't specific to me.
But somebody should explain it to him, maybe. He probably doesn't know.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Hunter knows. Hunter seems to know.
Knows. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he figured it out, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money here. Right?
How did we get all this?
This is great. I better call Iran right now. We got. There's a lot more here. I don't know what you're doing.
We're done. Man, that was a good show today. We had like 1,000 people on the show, like 1,000. We got a big show coming up tomorrow as well. I do want to thank all of our guests today. And, of course, my amazing cast, Lou Rapino, Justin Ellick, and Noam Layden. You have some free time today. Go enjoy this beautiful, sunny Monday. Say a prayer for Israel. Say a prayer for my guy Trump in a courtroom right now. And as my buddy Gene would say, God willing, we'll all be back to entertain you once again for a Tuesday show at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Until then, from all of us on Sid and Friends in the Morning, to all of you, peace!